Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And we are sorry about the short delay on this episode. I'm getting ready to move and didn't realize until rather late that certain obligations would prevent us from recording last week. In any case, though, this episode, we finally caught up to the present day with Autechre's most recent studio LPs, their 14th and 15th LPs to be exact, Sign and Plus, both released late last year in 2020. However, we're far from done with Autechre, and I want to give you a rough overview of what we'll be covering in the weeks to come. Basically, there are a few major aspects of Autechre's output that we'll try to discuss in roughly chronological order, starting with stuff like the Warp tapes and the artificial intelligence compilations, then moving on to Gescom, the remixes, and the Hafler Trio collaborations. Some of these will be like multi-part series, and others will just be one-offs. Along the way, we'll continue to do our shorter bonus episodes on like major radio mixes, especially popular live bootlegs, some weirder stuff maybe like the Pi soundtrack, the EP's box set as a whole, and other notable compilations on which Autechre's work has appeared, and then some fun stuff like ranking our favorite tracks, etc., etc. We also want to do episodes on Autechre's biggest influences and other artists that Autechre has influenced themselves, but we're not 100% sure where we'll fold that stuff in yet. The point is, we've got lots of stuff coming down the pike, and we're always going to keep you updated on what's coming up next. And on that note, our next proper episode, about a week from now because I screwed up our whole schedule, will be on a major chunk of the main discography that we've been skipping until now, the Japanese bonus tracks. We're going to discuss and maybe even rank all of them at once, so if you've got thoughts on any or all of the Japanese bonus tracks, send them our way, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll also do another listener email episode shortly after that, so if you've got new thoughts about Sign and Plus or anything Autechre related at all, send those in as well. And lastly, are there any AE adjacent topics you want to make sure we cover now that you're afraid we might miss? Do let us know, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Okay, I know it'll be hard to avoid comparing and contrasting until the end of our conversation, but I want to at least attempt to tackle Sign and Plus separately first. So Dan, what background info do we need to know about Sign?
Yeah, after teasing two new albums early in the year, Autechre released Sign, their 14th studio LP, in October of 2020. The official release date was October 16th, but the album was broadcast on the AE site a week earlier and made available as a digital download that same day, which was October 8th. According to Sean and Rob, the guys worked separately for almost a year after their 2018 tour, then discovered that a lot of their new material was similarly lush and emotionally resonant. They also note that a lot of their recent albums were practically live jams, but most of these new pieces were built up layer by layer very gradually, with a lot of work done to disguise the amount of stuff in there, Rob adds. Suppose you are looking at an acrylic vase on a lampstand. You might see loads of different layers, but you'll see a silhouette, and you'll see light travel through it. You'll get ideas about the construction or the materials, but you still see one surface, one curve. The guys delivered the album to Warp before the pandemic hit the UK and the US, and when asked about what it's like to listen to Sign now, Sean shared his illuminating comment, saying, "It's strangely jarring. It's sort of too real. All this COVID stuff has put me in a really different place from where I was when we were compiling it. Back then, we were saying this is totally right, but now I'm wondering if it's too right, and I'm feeling a bit self-conscious if I'm being totally honest. It's difficult to listen to because it's too emotionally resonant. I was going for something pure and new and sort of surprising, and now I've ended up with something that's almost predictable."
Funny enough, those qualities that now give Sean pause are the same things that critics seem to love about Sign, which was widely acclaimed. It got glowing reviews from Pitchfork, Resident Advisor, and The Wire, who called it, quote, "a reminder that Rob Brown and Sean Booth, when not making the crunchiest avant electronica out there, are capable of astonishing textural and melodic beauty." And yet, fans seem a little less enthusiastic. On Rate Your Music, for instance, Sign is sitting at an average rating of 3.38, just 0.03 above the worst-rated AE albums, Choristus, and perhaps fittingly, Plus. Now, this will be a slightly unique episode because we recorded first reaction episodes on Sign and Plus when they first came out, and we'll get to reassess those reactions now that the dust has settled a little bit. It's funny because I remember, you know, lots of fawning and much higher ratings when Sign dropped. I guess that always happens, but still. But what do you think, Dan? Does it seem to you like fans have kind of soured on Sign, or what's your sense of its reputation now?
You know, I think the thing is like the people who listen to an album, you know, right away, and hop on Rate Your Music and stuff to yeah. rate and talk about it are big fans. So I think, you know, it's obviously going to skew higher. And then, you know, the casual person who's just interested in electronic music or Autech or you know, yeah. just saw that it was, you know, topping the chart on Rate Your Music, you know, they check it out a little bit later and it tends to bring the score down. I don't feel like the core fans have really soured on it, you know. I don't get like that impression from like, you know, the Autech or subreddit or, you know, even it seems like people on the like Discord chat are frequently like talking about listening to it and stuff. It seems like it's maybe just the, you know, the casual fan who didn't expect Sign to be so, you know, maybe different from, you know, LSEC, NTS, you know, that sort of thing they've been doing lately. Yeah. Have maybe drug it down a little bit.
Yeah, it's just so weird because, you know, when I first heard Sign, I assumed it would be the kind of thing that more casual fans would like love, you know, would kind of gravitate to. And I just sort of assumed that a lot of people who were kind of turned off by the 2010s, like huge mm-hmm. data dump era and like all the like kind of wild experimentation would be like, all right, nice. They've gotten back on track. And you know, I guess it's just hard to tell. Is it the hardcore fans or is it these more casual fans? You know, who's responsible for this like downward trend? But I don't know. I just get this like weird feeling that it's just kind of, I don't know. People are almost like, have almost sort of, it's like they're underrated already somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you know, in such like a massive, like, you know, discography like Autechre has, I think it's sort of easy for that kind of thing to happen. And you know, maybe them being so new and slightly different, it sort of has led to like an underratedness.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of my theory that like stuff like XI and like even, you know, LSEC and NTS brought a lot of new fans on board because it was so like arresting. You had to stop and like take a listen because it's like, holy shit, they put out 8 hours of music. Like, I gotta check that out. And this is just like, it's like easier to ignore or something.
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, you know, too, like with NTS and LSEC, like it was a news story that they, you know, released such giant records, you know. So I think, right, you know, if you're just sort of casually into, you know, experimental music or, you know, less than mainstream kind of things, and maybe you see an article on Pitchfork mentioning a, you know, 6 hour album or something, you just, yeah, you know, you maybe you check that out of curiosity and find something you like. Whereas like, yeah, Sign, plus, you know, we're back to essentially normal album lengths, and so you know, it's not gonna garner that sort of attention anymore.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you what you remember about listening to Sign for the first time, even though we might be repeating ourselves a little bit from that first reactions episode. But first, let me read this email from listener Joe, who says, I was excited when I realized that Sign was going to be AE's third shortest album so far. I was one of the people that would have been disappointed if the next release had been 16 hours and was looking forward to them doing something different than the 2010s. I was psyched when I heard about the live stream because I missed out on the NTS ones completely. You mentioned the live chat that went along with the stream was a brain cell murder shit show, but I was on Reddit instead, where there was far more reasonable discussion. I loved the experience overall. So how were you feeling going into Sign, particularly since we knew it was going to be much shorter than their last few projects? And what do you remember about hearing it for the first time on that live stream?
Yeah, I you know, I was a little glad that it was back to a normal length, you know, and because if they just kept, you know, if it was a 16 hour, I'm like, then it becomes like a cliche and that's their thing. And, yeah, you know, so it was kind of nice to do the unexpected. As for the live stream, you know, I was working from home at that period, like a lot of people. And, you know, so it was fun to like have something to look forward to during a day and, you know, listen to it with everybody. That chat was you know, a lot shittier than the NTS yeah. ones. I wish I had known about the Discord then. I'm sure it was probably a lot yeah. lot better and whatnot. But yeah, like Reddit was fun and everything. I always enjoy like those sort of live stream things. It's fun listening to something, you know, they like you're the only person I know in real life that likes Autechre, so it's nice to, you know, get to talk to like people about something that's pretty niche.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, but it was just like, I don't know, I just felt like the Reddit discussion at that time was like just a little too slow, and everybody was just kind of on this like main chat mm-hmm. on the AU website. And but it was like useless because it was just all shit posting. You know, on top of that, I think that there was just something about Sign, obviously we'll get into it, but that just did not work well in the, like, you know, low bitrate live stream kind of like setting. And so it just felt like kind of a wash that, like, I just like couldn't get a handle on it on that first listen. You know, but I just sort of remember being like, well, we'll talk about this obviously, but I was just kind of like really expecting some sort of development of like the 1/6 sound, you know, that, that's really what I was assuming this would be. And so I was really scared when I saw that it was going to be such a short album, because I was like, God, that kind of style really needs to breathe. You know, like sometimes, maybe this isn't totally true, but like, you know how like Godspeed You has this, has like a big sort of bootleg reputation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they'll announce an album, and I guess technically it's kind of like they've just split up a song into a bunch of smaller pieces, but it just always feels like, oh, so Godspeed's putting out a 40-minute record, you know, like that sucks, because I thought it was going to be like these gargantuan 20-minute pieces or something like that. And I just kind of had that same fear, you know. Well, again, we'll talk about it, but it's like, it just wasn't, it wasn't the 1/6 thing that I was expecting. So, you know, to sum it up, I guess I just had like lots of mixed feelings. I was totally surprised. And if there's one thing I've learned about Autechre in doing this, you know, chronological deep dive, it's that I think they really do enjoy surprising fans in this way. Have you spent much time with Sign since that initial broadcast?
You know, I think I've mentioned it several times here on the podcast, but I haven't much other than, you know, we did our little first reaction video, and, you know, I've listened to it here and there, but I've definitely not listened to it as much as I like would have, you know, just on my own, a new album from a band I liked and an album I enjoyed. But I, you know, we were in the middle of doing this podcast, and, you know, so I didn't want to like constantly tricking myself into like, you know, comparing whatever we were listening to, you know, the current day and stuff. It, you know, I really tried with all the records, you know, to never look ahead or anything. So I played Sign and Plus, you know, here and there, but definitely not nearly as much as I would have if not for this podcast.
Yeah, I see. I kind of like, I've been very disciplined about it. I'm only going to listen to the album that we're reviewing. But for some reason, I made this like weird rule in my head where I'm allowed to listen to Sign and Plus also because they're new.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, I haven't been able to in like a very long time, because the last several albums we've discussed have been so long that like I have no time but to just listen to those ones, you know?
Yeah.
But there was a good stretch after Sign and Plus came out that I would kind of like throw them on, because I had sort of listened to whatever record we were talking about like once or twice already that day. And so I was like, well, let's throw on Sign and Plus, you know? So kind of returning to it this week, I just realized like maybe I actually did listen to it a lot more than I even realized. Although this was definitely like, you know, much appreciated that I got to just sit with Sign and Plus this whole time. Now, listener Jordan shared this overall description of Sign, where he says, the feel of this album is smooth and curvy rather than harsh, a sort of sweet taste. The beats are as rhythmically good as they usually are, but less overt than in older works. The synths are less harsh. They are less buzzy and more harmonic. And it reminded me of Rob's own description, where he compares the album to an acrylic lamp, saying you'll get ideas about the construction or the materials, but you still see one surface, one curve. So what do you make of these descriptions, and how would you describe the overall sound of Sign? What sound palette are Autechre working with this time?
Well, I think we're you know, we're definitely in a new era of Autechre. And I think that's, you know, to kind of go back a little bit, that's sort of the biggest surprise, you know, from that live stream and stuff. I, you know, like you said, thinking it would be more like 1/6, which I think is still sort of, you know, that previous era. I was shocked, you know, to be in a new world. But otherwise, you know, I really agree with what the listener said here. You know, it definitely is like a smooth and curvy sounding record, rather than harsh. You know, the NTS and LSEC and everything, AE Live and all, you know, kind of had this moments where, you know, it was very noisy and, you know, harsh and sort of unmusical at times, you know? And I feel like, you know, Sign is almost the kind of opposite palette of that. You know, here it's so, you know, lush and like sweet and melodic at times. You know, I the the lamp thing is, it's sort of like a strange metaphor, but I think I understand it. You know, because it is sort of like that, you know, it's all these materials, you know, put together, and they form this object, and, you know, looking at that object, you can't see the individual, you know, pieces, you know, it's very like, homogeneous and stuff, but
right.
but you know it's not just one thing, you know, it's got so many layers. I mean, it's really like a headphone record. And I think, you know, you mentioned it with the live stream being a little shitty because of the low bit rate. I like completely agree with that, because this is a record I think you want to hear loud and in your ears and paying close attention. It's one of those things like, you know, every time you listen to it, you can find a sound or a moment or something that you like didn't notice previously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got like a real like oozing, bubbling kind of quality. And I agree, it's like there's like you would have a temptation, I think, to call a lot of the tracks here like synth solos, which couldn't be further from the truth, you know. But you think about a track like F7 or something, or like GR4, you know, even like Mataz 4-8, you would be like, oh yeah, that's like a piece composed for solo synthesizer, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when you actually listen to it, there are so many layers and things going on. But it still just sort of retains that like weird simplicity where it just feels like this kind of singular piece. You know, you mentioned the melody, and I feel like that's obviously one of the most striking things here, because there is a lot of use, and like this would sound so mundane if you were talking about any other like, you know, musician, but there is a lot of use of like chord changes underneath a lead melody, you know what I mean, which is like a fundamental part of all music, but not for Autechre for the last like, you know, a couple decades, where it's like just straight up there are like these kind of gorgeous chords anchoring like these lead melodies. You know, and again, like I was just saying, it sounds like maybe a single kind of, you know, somebody with their left hand and their right hand, and yet you kind of realize that there are like sometimes dozens of sort of melodic voices, you know, all sort of like competing and like oozing in and out with each other, tangled together. And yet there's always this kind of like anchor chord that just makes the whole thing make sense. It just makes it feel like these kind of tightly composed little pieces.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's the sort of album, like, you know, if you just have it on in the background, or, you know, you listen to it once or twice, it does sort of sound like what you said, like, you know, almost solo synth, you know, pieces or something. But it's then when you look closer, you know, you see the parts of the lamp and you tell it, I mean, it's actually like incredibly dense. Like there's oftentimes like a ton of stuff going on. I think like the record has like a very like Vangelis sort of feel to it. Yeah, I like Vangelis, and I mean, I particularly love like the Blade Runner soundtrack, but some of his other work is, you know, it's cool, but it gets a little cheesy at times. And I think this feels like if Vangelis never was cheesy, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's something I think, I feel like our one of our listeners brought that up a little bit later, so we'll swing back to that. But like the other thing I wanted to mention, though, is just that like there's just such a cleanness to the sound here, and it sort of gets into that like that what's the word I want, like illusion of simplicity, mm-hmm. where it just feels so, I don't know, clean, you know. I liked how like The Wire sort of mentioned in their little review about like normally Sean Booth and Rob Brown are making the crunchiest avant electronica here, and you know, it's true that I've sort of come to associate this era with them. So then here it's just like so striking to hear such clean, I mean, lots of like beaming, totally bright sounds, you know. It's like again, I guess like you said, the total opposite. Now, we already started kind of getting into this, but I do want to ask you about Sean's comment about them trying to, quote, disguise the amount of stuff in these tracks. And we actually got a lot of emails on the topic as well. Listener Darren shared a review he wrote where he argues that the album is an exercise in restraint, saying that this new release embraces, if not simplicity exactly, then definitely warmth and emotion. It feels refreshing. Where a lot of the duo's material over the last few years has been quite cerebral, this album feels more from and to the heart. And listener Tron, similarly, Early argues that a lot of these tracks are simple enough to play on piano, calling them strikingly human and imperfect, introspective and emotional. On the other hand, listener Joe emphasized that you hear almost nothing repeat if you listen close enough, but if you zoom out, the songs sound like there's no development for 5 minutes and just stays in place. Listener Tom also wrote in to say that hi-fi listening is essential for all of Autechre's music, but especially for Sign and Plus. So there's a lot to unpack here, and some of these takes might not be as opposed as I'm making them out to be. But, you know, again, we started to get into it. But do you see the songs here as like strikingly simple or just deceptively simple until you, you know, that get into that required deep focus of kind of like headphone listening?
Yeah, I think it's deceptively simple. You know, there are some of the songs that feel like you could strip it down to, you know, just sort of a piano piece kind of thing. Like I was thinking, you know, there's always like those little orchestras and stuff that I'll like, you know, play Radiohead or play Bjork or yeah. something, or maybe, you know, I've even some Aphex Twin or something. It's yeah. like there's a couple things on here that you could strip away, you know, all the ethereal sort of layers, and it really is just sort of you know, a piano piece, you know, maybe like a small you know, violin concerto or something like there with it. But you know, it's deceptively so, because that's like when you just listen to the song and you know once or twice, maybe not paying that much attention, it feels like that's the meat of it. But really, you know, there's so much like other stuff around it that I think if you stripped all that away, the song would end up being like so bare and like empty. It's just like it's just in a way that you don't notice it. I don't think you notice it until like you would notice that how bad it is when it's gone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, here my take on it is that I'm almost of two minds, where it's like, it's deceptively simple. I agree, like with all these listeners on that, but it's like also not as complex as you think. Like there's sort of like this weird distance thing going on where it's like, when I zoom in too much, I think it's like more complicated than it actually is supposed to be. You know what I mean? It's like, there's like kind of that like middle range. I don't know if this even makes any sense, but it's like, it's kind of meant to like wash over you and to sound like a little bit repetitive. But then there's also like all of the constant, you know, the complete lack of repetition, just the constant oozing and, you know, development of the melody. Like there are tracks where it sounds like you could play it on a piano or something, like, I don't know, F7, right? It sounds like it could be like a solo piece, but I don't know. It's just like constantly evolving and like shifting and moving. It's like not, it almost just doesn't sound composed. It sounds like it's alive or something like that.
Yeah. It's like that algorithmic thing, which was sort of big in the previous era of Autechre, is like still sort of like sneaking its way through here and there. You know, it feels like, I think, you know, on first listen and not close listen, it sort of feels like they've gone in a more composed direction. But I think you're right. You know, it's still that algorithmic, you know, living, breathing, you know, organism, computer thing is still sort of there. It's just it's deceptively hidden.
Yeah, I just feel like on first listen you're like, nothing is happening, and then on second listen you're like, wow, so much is happening, and then on the third listen you're like, actually, you know what, just enough is happening.
Yeah,
like,
it's not in the Goldilocks zone. Yeah,
it really is, like, because it is still kind of like this beautiful simplicity, but you're right, there's like all of that sort of like, it's just like a almost perfect halfway point between the generative and the compose. And I almost feel like there's a lot of use of generative in those leads we were talking about. And then it almost feels like a very human touch to like anchor it with those chords. You know, I mean, sometimes the chords are like so sort of surprising and like shift in like strange, unexpected directions. But it's still just like everything has this kind of human touch that is like totally fascinating. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, on the topic of like all the stuff that's going on, I just started feeling like the sheer sound of this record is so impressive to me, where like it's totally integral, right? Like I kind of just disagree. Like I feel like if some of these tracks were just performed on piano, like you could maybe do it. You might need like a couple pianos to do it, but it just would be like kind of unimpressive. It's like the sound
of
the thing is so integral. You know, something like Esque Desk, right? It sounds like this kind of like very composed, like, you know, organ composition or something. Like it's got like this almost like romantic, like kind of brooding quality to it, like this dirge like quality, and you can almost like imagine it being like some sort of actual organ composition from, you know, whatever, the 1800s. And yet it's like the sound of these organs and everything, like these weird tones and like sometimes kind of like really bright beams and sometimes kind of like whining type sounds and stuff, and how they're all kind of like oozing in and out of time with each other. And so, you know what I mean? It's like the sound of the thing that I love, and the beautiful melody is almost like a bonus.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, I think like, you know, the technical proficiency isn't, you know, what I come to really any electronic music or Odd-Tekker, you know, for, you know, it's like prog garbage or whatever, you know, Yes or something. But like, yeah, you know, I want to hear like those cool sounds and stuff. And, you know, previously that's sort of, you know, that previous era was sort of all about that. And then now it's like, it's not like that's been left in the dust or anything. You know, we're still getting like beautiful sound design and interesting sound design. It's just like, we're also getting these, you know, kind of striking melodies. And I mean, you know, sort of pretty sound design. Whereas before, you know, it was like The Wire said, you know, crunchy and things.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. You think about a track like Arkaz, for example, like, which is often cited as like one of the most beautiful tracks here. Like, I don't know, if you played it on a piano, it would be cool, but it's like the weird, you know, that kind of like almost blown out like horn quality to the like lead sort of chords there that almost sound like thunder or something. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like they're quite like disruptive in this otherwise like pretty sort of still track. And there's like a bass drone sort of running over it that sort of forms this kind of walking bass line. And then like almost these lullaby type like toy sounds start to emerge and everything. It's like, I don't know, it's the sound design really, you know, that's for me the star of the show there. You know, listener Joe also calls Sign the first traditionally good entry point album for new listeners since the early 90s. And listener Marco said, call me a pleb, but this is where I started to like Odd-Tekker again after the too deep for me phase of LSEC and NTS. So do you hear Sign as accessible and inviting in that way?
I think it is more easy listening than, you know, the previous era, if only because it's a reasonable length. But also, yeah, I mean, yeah, your average, you know, music listener, it wants some melody and some, you know, some beauty, whereas NTS, LSEC, you know, all that could be tough to find, you know, just for your average Joe. I don't know if it's like a great entry point for Odd-Tekker because, you know, people always make those like little flow charts. It's like, you know, start here. If you like this, you know, yeah, go to this. Like Sign, we're in like such new territory. It's like if you start with Sign, yeah, or Plus, and you're like, if you like that, you know, which one do you suggest, you know, next? Like Amber, but just because I would suggest Amber as a better entry point. Anyways, yeah, you know, yeah, what I mean? It's just sort of, I don't know like where you go next. I mean, maybe it's a good way to, you know, if someone's like sort of familiar with Odd-Tekker and, you know, maybe like a little intimidated by it or something, it's maybe a good way to show them that, you know, that there is like some beauty and stuff to fight. You know, it's not something to be intimidated by.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like, you know, getting back to what we were talking about, like the rating trend on Rate Your Music here, it almost seems like it might not be so impressive to new listeners, you know, like they just might not like realize the depth of the things. Yeah. They don't know that with Odd-Tekker, you got to go like really digging for that depth. And it just like seems at first blush, like so simple, like we were saying, you know. But I was also thinking, like, speaking of memes, you know, that like the like sort of iceberg meme where you would put like the, you know, deepest level.
Yeah,
of,
yeah, yeah.
An artist's like discography and then like the more surface like casual level and stuff. I feel like I would put Sign like at the top and also the bottom, like come back to it. Yeah, you could start here but come back to it like after the end and you'll see like there was actually a lot more going on than you maybe first realized. A bunch of these listeners mentioned the beauty of the record, as we were already discussing, and Sean uses the phrase emotionally resonant a lot. Another listener, A. Mule, if I'm pronouncing it right, I'm probably not, called Sign Odd-Tekker's summer album. Those warm pads, lush synths, and pleasant melodies, this is a lot more happy and bright than their recent releases, or even any, really. So what do you think of that, and how would you describe the mood here?
Yeah, you know, Sean's phrase of emotionally resonant, I think is good. I feel like, you know, Odd Tucker's always sort of gotten this reputation for being, you know, very like robotic and inhuman and emotionless and stuff. So it is like sort of impressive, you know, to now make an album that everyone uses like the term emotional to describe and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's really interesting. As far as it being like a summer album, I don't know if I fully agree with that. You know, I couldn't, I don't think I could slip this on at the pool or anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's got kind of like a melancholy strain running through it. I think like we keep talking about like the beauty and everything, but there's something kind of like plaintive about it. Mm-hmm. And so I could see like a summer night kind
of
album.
Yeah, I could see that. It definitely has a nighttime feel.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is like very bright and warm. I totally agree with this listener, but it's like also a little sad. And I don't know, it's weird. I can't remember like another time that I called like a Odd Tucker record sad. You know, I've used like menacing, frightening, scary, you know, but like never sad.
No, exactly. I mean, sad is sort of like, it's not really like a emotion I really associate with electronic music. You know, it's not really like something that it usually goes for. It's either the happy, you know, party dancing kind of thing, or the menacing, scary, you know, dark thing. You know, weirdly sad is like a emotion it doesn't seem to touch on that often.
Yeah. Might be worth pausing here, even though I'm a little hesitant to talk about the context. You read that interesting comment from Sean about the album being, quote, too right for the moment. And listener Dan wrote in to say, I think it's hard not to play Sign in context of the pandemic. It's almost a perfect soundtrack. It's somber, slightly menacing, and it ends with probably the most beautiful piece of music Odd Tucker have ever created. Listener Colin also singled out Esk Desk as the darkest moment on the album, saying, it sounds like a theme for the doom that was 2020. So how do you think COVID affects the way we hear this album, or maybe just everybody has sort of related to this album?
I mean, you know, it's impossible basically to separate them. I mean, this came out in October, you know, that's deep into the pandemic. And even though, you know, it wasn't created, you know, during it, it is like strangely, you know, prescient and stuff, because it does like have like a you know, you do sort of get those like that doom melancholy sort of feeling, which you know, with October was a pretty melancholy, you know, doom sort of time. You know, it's a lot of times I think I would say like, you know, people are just reading into it. You know, it's biased because, you know, you're projecting your own experiences on it, but
right,
I mean,
right.
I think this record like really does sort of have those qualities, and it's just you know, either unfortunate luck. It's, you know, Sean and Rob seem to not really dig that it has this, you know, sort of association, but it's also just kind of, you know, maybe even like a necessary kind of record. You know, if they came out with something that was, you know, real dancey, you know,
yeah,
stuff, it kind of just, people maybe wouldn't have been even in the mood for it, kind of thing.
I know. Well, it's funny to remember because like I was just thinking about it, you know, like the 1/6 sets came out like at the very start of the pandemic, and at that time it just seemed like a little less serious to me, or I just didn't really like understand the, you know, gravity of the situation. And I was thinking, this is perfect because it's like a ton of material to listen to. We're all bored. This will be fun. You know what I mean?
And then, yeah, that was still like when it was like, hey, Tiger King is on.
Yeah,
you know, like everyone was just sort of, it was like a vacation for a little bit. It's like, oh, it'll be over by Easter.
Yeah, that was how like it felt. And then like by the time of Sign, like it had really settled in. And yet, you know, like to what that listener was saying just a minute ago about like how it's got like sort of a warmth to it, this record, I just feel like it almost perfectly captures how I was feeling at the moment, which was like, you know, things are like kind of scary and like sad, you know, but like for me, I'm just at home, like with, you know, my wife, like I'm just kind of like,
no, yes.
You know what I mean? Like no, kind of had that like simultaneous like sadness, but also just like, it was nice being at home and stuff. It just weirdly like captured that like weird, indescribable feeling that I felt in October.
No, yeah. I mean, October was like the perfect time for this to come out, you know, because same way, it was sort of at that period where it was like, you know, the end wasn't really in sight at all. You know, whereas earlier, you know, obviously the end was even less in sight, but it was like sort of like, in everyone's ignorance, you know, or, you know, refusal to believe it wasn't going to be in sight. You know, it just kept being like, oh yeah, the lockdown's just going to be a, you know, a week or a month or, you know, and then it was 2 weeks, then it was 3 weeks, you know, and so on and so forth. And by October, it was just sort of like, you know, will this ever end and everything? And so, but yeah, I mean, I had the same thing because I was sitting at home with my wife. I was, you know, working from home. I wasn't really having to do much. It was like strange. Like if the world wasn't falling down around everything, it would have been like a really great time.
Yeah. And I hope it doesn't like sound like, you know, we're minimizing, cause I know a lot of people had it like way worse.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I just feel like for me personally, it was like this weird kind of captured just the feeling of like, you know, adjusting to this like weird kind of scary new reality and just kind of like figuring out a way to, you know, still have happy moments. It just like weirdly captured that. Now, on the topic of, you know, what you mentioned earlier about Sean and Rob not being so happy about this association and this timing, you know, I totally understand that because like I was saying earlier, it just seems like they are very interested in sort of surprising fans, you know, like again and again and sort of like switching up. And imagine if there was no pandemic and like this album came out, it would be like so weird.
Yeah,
I think it'd be like what's gotten into them? Like what the hell? Like did they have a personal tragedy or like what is going on? But instead it like just sort of felt like, oh yes, of course.
Yeah, no, exactly, you know. I think people too like probably don't realize, you know, like this album was recorded before the pandemic, you know, because it does sort of have that feeling like it, yeah, it makes sense and it's very like of the time and stuff, but it's really just, you know, coincidence or you know, bad luck on their part. Because you're right,
shock.
Yeah, because I think it definitely, you know, a lot of people were sort of just expecting, you know, the next, you know, step on from NTS or the 1-6 sets. And then, yeah, I mean, it's something like completely left field. Whereas, you know, if it was a normal year, you know, if this came out in 2019 or something, like it really would have been strange, you know. It would have been like, oh, you know, man, you know, we're going sad, you know, melancholy over here.
I know. I was trying to think of like a similar situation or something, and maybe this isn't the best comparison, but you know, like what's that, like a Beck album, Sea Change, that was like all of a sudden like really depressed and sad and like acoustic, and that was just kind of like, what the hell? Like what? I never imagined, like, you know, that the dude who was like making Odelay and stuff would like shift into this. So there would have been like that same kind of like fun and surprise, and in a way COVID ruined the surprise. So I get why they're sort of annoyed by that. And I kind of wonder if when more time has passed, if we'll forever associate this album with COVID, or if, you know, like 10 years from now, it'll just be like that strange detour into like really emotionally resonant music.
Yeah. That will be like an interesting thing. You know, I wonder like how much COVID will stick in everyone's mind. Yeah. You know, I think it will, more, you know, cause I think of like, you know, the 1917 like pandemic, I don't think most people had heard of that until COVID,
right?
Because, you know, people were talking about it like in response to COVID. But I mean, one, that was 100 years ago, and, you know, two, it was a completely different world. So I do wonder, you know, like will COVID sort of be like the new 9/11, where it's like, you know, you think of the world as pre 9/11, post 9/11, at least here in America, you know, will it be like that with COVID, or will we just, you know, forget about it and 5-10 years, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get like too far off track, but I just have this weird feeling that we're going to like totally forget about it, because it's like,
I feel like we're already doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. There was all this stuff like, you know how like it felt like before this, it was like the future is online work and online teaching, and this is going to hasten that. And then like after doing it, we were all like, this sucks. Let's never do that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
I mean? Like everything, every like way that life changed for the pandemic, I feel like we're going to like shift hard in the opposite direction, because it was like not fun at all. And anyway, side comment, but I feel like it's possible that we may be able to, you know, hopefully Sean will be happy about this, separate Sign from its context. But let's talk a little bit more about how Sign relates to Autechre's previous work, starting with 1-6. We mentioned that 1/6 feels a little disconnected from the albums around it, but listener Sean says he loves the 1/6 sets because he's someone who really fell in love with Autechre after hearing M4 Lima, and he says, I can hear the origins of the Sign sound in here. And listener Joe calls Sign the most analog sounding work that they've done in a very long time. I know it was probably all done on Max MSP, but I think this is more a continuity with the 1/6 era. This continues their celebration of early electronic compositions. You mentioned, you know, Vangelis already, but what do you think about that take? Is Sign more similar to the 1/6 sets than we previously thought?
I think in the sense of what that listener said of it being like sort of the most analog sounding in a while, because it truly does sound like, you know, some of those old, you know, Vangelis-y, you know, synths, you know, like the Prophet and all that, you know, stuff, like the real nice, you know, poly-voiced synths. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it probably was done on a computer, but this really, you know, whereas like LSEC NTS, like those feel like computer music. You know, like those don't seem like you could make that with hardware. These, like, weirdly, like, kind of do a lot of times. I wish they were more forthright with how they do stuff. You know, I guess it's some of the mystique and stuff. But I would love to know, you know, is it Max MSP controlling, you know, physical hardware? Is this all like modeling? You know, I mean, because if this is modeling, that's insane, basically. I think like it does relate to 1/6 in that sort of, like, you know, a bit of a love letter to early electronic, not in like a, you know, retreading sort of way. You know, I think they're definitely like adding to it, but I think there's definitely like a fondness and everything like put towards that early electronic stuff here. You know, 1/6 I think was like you know, more of the electroacoustic, you know, the
like
weirder,
the bubbling and the gurgling,
and the sort of pre Wendy Carlos, you know, that this is an actual, you know, the synthesizer could be an actual instrument. You know, this is almost like, you know, maybe this new era of Autechre is we go through the eras of electronic
music.
Like
we're onto,
you know,
onto the '70s and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, 1/6 was, you know, the '50s to early '60s. And here we've got, you know, late '60s to, you know, late '70s kind of thing going on.
It does kind of feel like that. It's like, I kind of feel like what I didn't appreciate until we did these back to back, the 1/6 and now the Sign and the Plus, is like, I feel like they just sort of reached this like new depth of mixing or something, or of like new depth of sound design. We talked about how like with 1/6 they started to shift into this, like, and really with NTS as well, like this kind of like deep mixing thing where it's like things are sort of buried and down in there and you got to sort of dig them out. And I feel like this has that, as we've already sort of discussed at length, and it just has like 1/6 felt like this new level of that sort of skill, and this feels like that skill but applied to, you know, something totally opposite, like something like, you know, just composition, honestly. And so I really appreciate that about it. The other thing that this album sort of made me think about in terms of like electronic, early electronic music and stuff like that, is like, I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but there was a time, like in the '70s, for example, when just like a Moog like sounded incredible. You know what I mean? Like that was sound design. And now we think if you like just did like a normal like Moog, or you just did, you know, we'll talk about this on Plus, but like you just did an 808 cowbell, it would sound like really
lazy,
you know what I mean? Predictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was a time when that was like the most inventive sound ever. And I feel like sometimes on Sign, I think like it's almost so simple. And I don't know, like you said, if it's like actually controlling hardware. I'm just like not into synths enough to like know all that stuff and like be able to pick synths out. But it's like, there are times where I just think, it's reminding me how incredible some of those like basic sounds were, you know what I mean? Like a Juno 106 or something, like that sound is unbelievable. We've gotten bored of it, but it's like Autechre is making me remember how amazing it is.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've talked about it. I love like the old electronic music, and I love picking up like weird Moog, you know, records at the thrift store and stuff, you know, just because you're right. You know, I mean, it was like the electric guitar had just been invented, you know, it was literally like sounds that have never been heard before. And yeah, I mean, after, you know, 50, 60 years, it's like the electric guitar. It's just sort of, you ubiquitous and has become, you know, it's the same, you know, Chuck Berry was nuts, you know, and that was just a no pedals, and you know, just a guitar straight through an amp, you know. You do that now and it's you know, it's a little,
I know,
it's a little weird, corny even.
You know that feeling like when you get a new synth and you start messing with it and you're like, that sounds really cool, but I gotta like fuck it up now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's the like core sound of this thing, you know. So for some reason it just sort of feels like this celebration of like the clean core sounds or something. Like even though they probably designed it on MXMSP, it feels like this weird like just remember how amazing like electronic music really is, like just at the bottom of it. You know, on the flip side though, listener Joe also notes that a lot of listeners seem disappointed with Sign because it wasn't the huge step forward that 1/6 seemed to predict, but says the reason why Sign got universally good reviews from people who don't have Star Trek The Next Generation themed avatars on We Are the Music Makers is because it's a good album, not because the reviewers were all a bunch of hack dummy casuals who didn't get into every single 1/6 bootleg the second they got leaked. So do you agree that Sign isn't a huge jump forward? And is it possible that some listeners would enjoy it more if they just kind of forgot about how like out there an experimental 1/6 is?
I think like, yeah, you know, 1/6, we talked about it in our last episode, like how that was, you know, written for these like seated venues and stuff, like it was composed like with the venues in mind. And that was something, yeah. You know, and once I learned that, it sort of like opened up the idea of 1/6, it made it make much more sense, and I think that like makes 1/6 like much more of a detour than a lot of people, you know, were sort of thinking it would be, you know, because I guess like, I mean, I didn't know the thing about the venues until we started prepping for our, you know, last episode,
right?
And so maybe other people didn't either, and when you listen to it that way, you know, I sort of thought about it the way I saw Ottecker, you know, standing in a regular old club.
Right.
And if you think of, you know, 1/6 standing in a regular old club, it's really insane. But I think when you put the seated venue context to it, it makes more sense. And it's more of this, what we talked about, like this electronic music, you know, love letter kind of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I think like that sort of, if I knew that at the time, I think I wouldn't really expect like the next record to go in the way of 1/6, because 1/6 like requires like that venue thing. So, you know, it's such like an integral part of that process, I think, that like I wouldn't really expect a record to like continue that or to build off it or anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, going into it, I thought that that's what we were going to get. Like,
I did too. I didn't know that. Yeah.
I assumed 1/6 pointed the way forward, but you're right. Now it sort of seems more like a thing that was prepared for a very specific context, which was like concert halls. And it sort of like works perfectly in that setting because it does feel like sort of early electronic composition and stuff like that. You know, this feels much more designed for home listening, and, you know, it almost makes it feel like that tour, the 1/6 tour, was like the laboratory where they sort of worked on the sounds and the mixing techniques that they then used to create like kind of a very different thing. You know, but the question, like, I hear this a lot, that like Sign is disappointing to people because it isn't any kind of huge jump forward, not even like just a development of 1/6, but just like, you know, the first Ottecker album in almost 10 years that wasn't like a big leap. Is that how you see it? Because we had listeners write in that were like, you know, people shouldn't stress so much about that. Like, not every album has to be a big jump forward. But do you see it as a jump forward?
I mean, a jump forward in the sense of, like, pushing electronic music forward, or it just, like, being different from anything else in, like, Ottecker's discography?
Well, I guess that's...
That's the question.
But there are a lot of albums where we get both, right? We get both definitely. At the same time on like Confield and Untilted and stuff like that. So,
well, I think it is like much different than much of the rest of Ottecker's discography. I mean, like I said, you know, if you're making the flow chart and you start at Sign, I don't particularly know, you know, what to go to next, you know, right offhand.
Right.
You know, I think it is a jump forward. It's maybe not like some sort of leap like NTS and LSEC were or something, but I mean, it's a group that's in their like 20th, you know, second decade, third decade,
right?
However long it's been, you can't expect like everything to be like a world shattering, you know, giant thing. Not to diminish Sign, because I think it is like great and like a new thing. Really, like I said, I mean, if they made L-Sect, you know, six here and just like it was another, you know, 16 hour album with just crazy noise, you know, like, I mean, would I enjoy it? Yeah, sure. But I'm almost kind of glad, you know, or I am glad, like looking back, that they did do something different, you know, that it's it's nice enough to get a new thing, you know. So I mean,
the thing that I've kind of like come to realize, we've talked about this many times before, is like, it just kind of seems from this distance like Autechre is on a constant move forward. But what you realize when you kind of go step by step through the discography is that they're actually making like a bunch of lateral moves, and maybe it kind of like slowly works in some way that we would call forward, you know, but like they're actually just like always going like side to side, like zigzagging all over the place. And, you know, like would you call like Oversteps a big jump forward? I don't know. Like, would you call Chiastic Slide a big jump forward from Tri Repete? Like, I don't know. It's just like they just sort of like shift into like some unexpected direction, not necessarily forward. And I feel like coming off of the 2010s work, like you were just saying, like really crunchy avant electronica stuff, it's like, this is a pretty unexpected, like pretty wild move. So I just really don't even understand that criticism that it's not like a forward leap.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. You know, it has been like a career of these like insane lateral leaps. Even like, you know, when you get an album and then there's an EP that follows it, like very frequently that EP is even like very different, you know, like how often do we say like, this doesn't even sound like it's from the same, you know, time period and stuff, you know? They're just like such a chameleon, you know, of a group.
Yeah. Well, as you might expect, we got a ton of emails comparing Sign to Oversteps. I can't read all of them, but listener Pokepox calls it Autechre's worst album since Incunabula because it's basically just more of Oversteps, but with a sonic palette far more bland and samey. And listener Tron says he initially found it to be quite boring. It sounded an awful lot like Oversteps, like an Oversteps 2.0 or 1.5 even. On the other hand, listener Colin says he understands the comparison, but Sign still feels like a fresh direction and a lot stronger than Oversteps in my opinion. And listener Marco writes, Sign feels like the missing link between Oversteps and XI that everybody was searching for. It has the melody and the ambience focus of the former, but with the palette and texture of the latter, and the more classic album length keeps the tracks more tightly focused than on previous works. So what's your take on the, you know, oft-noted similarities between Sign and Oversteps, which neither of us are particularly big fans of?
I honestly didn't have that thought myself, you know, listening to it, you know, not until like I read other people saying that. And it might be because Oversteps is like one of the albums I listen to the least of Autechre, so it's, you know, not as prevalent in my mind and everything, but I don't hear it as just, you know, Oversteps 1.5 or anything. What about you?
Yeah, I really don't either, and it's like I almost can't justify it because it's like, you know, I'll just say I kind of love Sign and I don't love Oversteps nearly as much, and I feel like, you know, people would call me out and say that's inconsistent. They might be right, but I just feel like I just always kind of felt like Sign was more of like, you know, those like really amazing sort of short ambient tracks on Choristus. And I feel like I was always pining for like an entire album of Altabizzes, you know?
Yeah.
And this is kind of that. And that's not to say that it's like a total retread of like stuff they were doing, you know, more than 10 years ago, but it just feels like, I don't know, Oversteps was, honestly, if you think about it, like it's got a lot of this kind of Baroque type composition and like strong melodic focus, but like the sound design is often not like that shocking or impressive to me, like on Oversteps. And there are a bunch of tracks on Oversteps that are like kind of weirdly like normal beats, but we talked about how it's weird because they're like the beat heavy tracks feel like the interludes because they're like less interesting than the more, you know what I mean? Like there was so much stuff that just sounded like it could have been actually, like we were saying earlier, played on a piano. And here it's more like the sound design is like at the heights of anything Autechre has done so far, and it just sort of like, I don't know, sticks the landing more instead of like almost wavering the way Oversteps does. I don't know if that justifies it at all.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I think it's justified.
Well, This might be a good point to talk about the artwork created once again by the designers Republic, because listener Trond writes, like Oversteps and Move of 10, there are circular shapes on the covers of Sign and Plus, and one could get into the deep symbolism of the circle, but a closer inspection reveals that they are actually not circles, but rather several bean-shaped patches of color eclipsing one another, creating an illusion of circles. The bean shape is loaded with symbolism as well, from immortality and fertility to magic powers. Beans are even used as a means of keeping count. So the circles could signify AE going into yet another decade, beginning of something new, or Autechre coming full circle. Yet the coming full circle and the beginning of something new could just as well be an illusion made up by the sense of immortality from simply carrying on doing what one does. And isn't that central to the human condition, to feel immortal, especially in this time of so many magic powers given to us through modern technology? Who could truly acknowledge their immortality in the creative grind of modern everyday life? Trond always comes through and it totally outdoes me with the overthink sense. Now, listener Tyler also asks, what do you make of the fact that Sign and Plus is the first AE artwork to feature color since 2008. 12 years of consistently grayscale black and white artwork, then a splash of color. I think it signals a new era for Autechre, and I think M4 Lima fits incredibly well with the artwork. I remember hearing all the mangled sounds in the first 2 minutes and thinking, ah, more of the usual abstraction and madness, and then hearing that gorgeous chord and thinking, holy shit, what was that? The hair on the back of my neck stood up. It's that moment that makes me tie this track to the artwork. I envisioned the Sign artwork without the circle, just the gray background, something that would fit their artwork theme for the last decade, and then as that chord comes in, that circle suddenly grows into existence from nothing and pulses around as the chords swell and shrink through the duration of the track. That synth is the splash of color on the artwork, and the particular shape it's making is like a freeze frame of the many different pulses it undergoes as the synth changes throughout the track. So I know that was a lot, but I liked both of these analyses very much. So, but what do you think of them, and what do you think of the Sign artwork in general?
Yeah, I like both of those analyses as well. The artwork in general, I'll say just purely from a aesthetic standpoint, these are some of my least favorite covers from Autechre.
Really?
Yeah, I don't love them. It is sort of strange that we've gone with color after so many years. I don't understand, you know, what it's supposed to be. Yeah, you know, the bean thing is interesting. It really reminds me of like, did you see like the first picture ever of a black hole like a year or so ago? The Sign one is the same like colors.
That's right.
And it sort of like reminds me of that. But then Plus is like that if it was made of Sprite.
yeah. I mean, I have kind of my own overthinks it on this, which is like, you know, if it was a perfect circle, we would say that there's a circle on the cover, right? Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like the cover is a picture of a circle. But instead, it's like this weird kind of lopsided thing. And it just makes me think of, you know, like on a test or something, like when your teacher like circles something, like what they're trying to draw your attention to is the thing in the circle, you know, not the circle.
Yeah, not the circle.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it just kind of has this weird imperfection that makes me think of like it is circling something. And what it's circling is nothing. Okay. So my overthinks it is that so many of the tracks here, like I feel like I talked about the cleanness of the sound, which to me is like just so arresting over and over again. And I think about tracks like the Red A, where like these kind of blown out, like damaged chords are kind of flickering. And like what my attention goes to is like the empty space between the flickering chords. You know what I mean? It's like such an empty minimalist track, or like AU14, right? It's kind of got like this huge, like kind of booming bassy beat, you know, but there's so much empty space in it that you feel like you could like hear a pin drop or something in the middle of it. And so that was kind of the theory I started to develop, is like the subject of the album is actually the empty space.
You know, I sort of, you know, can get behind you a little bit. There's a few things like on this record that like make me think of like space, like literal, you know, outer space, things like M4 Lima, the way it like, you know, it starts, and listener Tyler, you know, sort of mentioned this, like the way it like comes into formation, like,
right.
I'm not one for making up the, you know, stories about the tracks, like the listeners and everything always do, but that like always makes me think of like the Big Bang, and stuff, you know, like it just sounds like this sound universe is being created here. And then, you know, the one song is called AU14. AU is astronomical units, which is the distance between Earth and the Sun. So I don't know if that's just a coincidence or if it is, you know, that would be 14 times the distance between Earth to the sun. I don't know if that's, you know, on
it's
purpose
also
or anything.
Autechre's 14th album.
Oh, see, I didn't even think of that. That probably is more of what it is. but I just always, you know, I do think about space a lot with this record,
right,
you
right.
know?
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And even though it's not like, you know, it's not like a spacey kind of, you know, it's not a space rock, you know, kind of thing that I think is like intentionally making you think of space. It just like sort of, I don't know,
yeah.
metaphorically makes me think of it.
I think about that too, and I think about like how, you know, empty space is, you know what I mean? It's like mostly nothing. And if you think about like the artwork kind of looks like that first picture of a black hole, it's like, I'm kind of talking out my ass because I don't know anything about it, but it's like, what is inside of a black hole is like, I guess nothing, you know, it's like just emptiness or whatever. So I don't know. It feels like we're onto something there.
Yeah. Not,
you don't have to correct me.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. It's all right. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It's actually, it'd be a lot of stuff, but,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, I get you.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's talk about some favorite tracks. Actually, let me quiz you first. I almost forgot to do this. But we've only got two bolded tracks on this record on Rate Your Music. So if that's anything like consensus, what do you think they are?
Well, first off, I think after this, I'm allowed to get the premium Rate Your Music, so I can look finally. But I think Our Cats is probably bolded, and I want to say M4 Lima, but I'm also leaning to the Red A. I'll go M4 Lima.
It is M4 Lima, but the other one is Mataz Form 8. I am honestly shocked that Arcast is not bolded.
I thought that was a slam dunk there.
Yeah, but what are your favorite tracks here?
Well, as pretty much I always do, I picked mine. I assumed everyone agreed with me. I mean, Our Cats, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more, but it's such a great, like, closer, you know, just, like, incredibly, you know, beautiful. I love M4 Lima for, you know, the stuff I was talking about just a minute ago. The Red A, I like a lot. Like you were saying, those, like, sort of synth, you know, lines that are, like, flickering. It's almost like they're verging on like being destroyed or something, you know, like they're like struggling to continue to exist or something. I really like those the most.
Yeah, I have a honestly hard time picking because I kind of like love every second of this album, again sort of spoiling my final opinion, but like M4 Lima is an obvious highlight for me. I don't want to like sound like too much of a pleb, but like I love all of the tracks with beats, like clear beats on this album. And it's not because the other ones are not as good, but like there is something about the drum programming, like the sound of the drums, right? So like when I'm listening to like AU14, you know what I mean? Like the weird, like hyper clean, like just so, I don't know, well-defined and just like so clean, but like so heavy kind of sound of the drums there. Or like, this is like, I feel like the hardest Autechre track to say yet, but SCHMEFT2, however the hell you would say that. The drums are like, I mentioned earlier how like the melodies are an added bonus for me. It's like when I listen to those tracks, I could listen to the drums on anything forever. You know, like I wouldn't even need such pretty melodies. They do have them, but it's just like the sound of the drums is like, and also like, you know, SI00 has kind of a similar thing where it's like, you know, it's kind of just like almost like a four on the floor, kind of like, I don't know, slippery kind of, I mean, it's like sounds kind of lopsided and weird, but then like that kind of droning, like low end, like I've never heard such potent low end on any record of my life.
Yeah. I mean, I think like this album, the drums like sort of get underrated. You know, I don't think of this as like a beat heavy record or anything, but there really are like some good, drum sounds and, you know, drum moments here.
Yeah. Or like M4 Lima, everybody talks about the pretty chords and everything. And like, I agree, they're stellar, but like the drums on that track are insane.
Yeah.
And, like, the way they kind of like start and stop. But you know, I'll save it for a second because we got a lot of track by track breakdowns this time around, and it won't be possible to read all of them as much as I'd like to, but almost every emailer seemed to single out M4 Lima as a highlight. We already heard from listener Tyler, who links the track to the artwork, and listener Joe says that the way the initial chaos gives way to the beauty and order of the rest of M4 Lima represents Autechre's creative process for him, adding, all of their albums stem from the same messy creative process of experimentation and improvisation with old and new patches or gear, and develop their own identities over the course of the album's creation. On the other hand, listener Colin describes M4 Lima as a classic case of AE misdirection, saying it stands out from the rest of the album and having the most beat structure and relying least on synth melodies. So we've already sort of started to talk about it, but what do you think about M4 Lima, and what do you think about it as serving as an opener?
You know, I kind of like it as an opener to start there, especially like that live stream. I mean, I agree totally with what we read from listener Tyler, where it was like, you know, when that live stream started and it was this, you know, formless, you know, kind of weird, you know, bumping of M4 Lima, it was like, oh, okay, that's what I thought we were gonna get. And then, you know, it becomes this other thing, and then the rest of Sign, you know, becomes what it is. It was a perfect, like, sort of you know, kind of, and maybe it only works once, but it was a sort of like a perfect little, like, ah, tricked you, you know, kind of little opener into the record.
It does kind of sound like we're in 1/6 territory, right?
This
was the laboratory that this was all born out of, and you get to hear like a little 1/6 snippet before it kind of like explodes into this lush, more Sign like kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like a wink and a nod to like the, you know, the over obsessive, you know, fan who was going through all the 1/6 bootlegs and stuff. You know, and I mean, like I said, it's one of my favorite songs here. I think it's just like so interesting, you know, like with the percussion and everything is so cool. The start stop, just the like formlessness, and then it the whole thing, you know, taking form. It like almost, I think the track like at first like feels like an intro kind of track, but then, you know, it becomes something else, and I mean it actually is the longest song on the record, and it's like,
I can't believe
it either.
Every time I start it, that it's 9 minutes long. Like, it does not feel like it at all.
No, it does not, for real. You know, it's just like such a deceptively like awesome track, you know, like I think even the you know, the first time or two I listened to Sign, I really just did sort of think of it as like the interlude or the you know, intro kind of thing, but you know that's like incredibly wrong, actually.
Yeah, the other thing that, I mean, I just love this track, but the other thing that always amazes me every time I put it on, I mean, I just like have no trouble calling it like one of Autechre's best tracks ever, honestly, but like, there's something, and I don't know how they accomplish this, but you talk about space and like the universe forming and stuff. It really feels to me like my head is the sun and the sounds are revolving around it. Like, it's not literally doing that like kind of cheap panning trick, but the way that, like, you know, this kind of beat, which is like so crisp and so clear, kind of like fades out of view, you know, like over and over again, you know what I mean? Like, it, you know how like when things revolve, they're not like a perfect distance all the time from the sun. You know what I mean? So it's like, sometimes it's like farther away, sometimes it's like really close to your head. Like, there's all this kind of, all that like formlessness in the beginning, like this weird grinding metal and static electricity, like sometimes it vanishes and other times it's like really close again, you know what I mean? It just like feels like the whole thing is like just not settled in place. Like, it's all just sort of moving around.
No, yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, it reminds me of, you know, like the Big Bang and stuff. It's like the, you know, maybe a couple million years later when it's like, you know, small planets and stars and stuff are forming, and, you know, we're getting orbits and everything, but they're still like, you know, pretty formless and, you know, even more elliptical and crazy and stuff. It does like have that feeling, and yeah, exactly, it doesn't do that cheap panning trick of just literally orbiting your head, you know. It does it in like a much more interesting and arresting sort of way.
Yeah, we also heard a lot of love for Mataz Form 8 and R-Cast, which listener Colin called triumphant shifts into Tim Hecker-esque ambient territory. And listener Joe wrote, if I had to bet $100 on a take you're going to make, it's that R-Cast is unjustifiably emotional, epic, and elegant to close out an album like this, as you usually feel this way about all of my favorite album closers. I preemptively disagree, mostly because I'm a sentimental and emotional sucker for these kinds of closing tracks. Like the entire rest of the album, I love how minimalistic it is in terms of sound design, with plenty of empty space used carefully. You know, on that note, I never felt like that once. I mean, I love R-Cast. I absolutely adore it. And I just feel like we do talk sometimes about how, like, it feels like these really grand endings aren't quite earned, especially like on, you know, LSEC and stuff, where they feel so short, you know what I mean? It just gets like so epic at the end, mm-hmm. or something like that. This album is like kind of gorgeous all the way through. I mean, every single track. And then it's like they saved, I think, the prettiest for last, which makes sense. So it's like they didn't even have to earn it, because we're already in like pretty territory, but it just makes perfect sense to close on like such a pretty track, you know. But do you like R-Cast as the closer, and maybe what do you think about both of these ambient epics?
Yeah, I mean, I like both of them. In fact, I like R-Cast as a closer, basically for the same reasons you said, you know, like with LSEC and stuff, like it, some of those moments of grandeur, you know, didn't seem quite earned, yet. But yeah, here, you know, we've been in pretty territory for a while, and then we just sort of end it in, you know, even lusher, you know, prettier, yeah. thing. So I guess Joe owes us $100.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I mean, on the topic of Mataz Form 8, you know, I'll say it's not one of my favorites here, but I just have like no problem with it, because it's, I don't know, it's just like very just openly beautiful, and it's got like all these kind of swelling, like buzzy kind of phasing, you know, pads and things, and it's got like just a nice like kind of watery lead melody, maybe reminds me of like M4 Lima's leads a little bit and stuff. And I don't know, you know, if it was like up, if I was like the god of Rate Your Music, I would bold R-Cast instead of Mataz Form 8. Mm-hmm. But I get why a lot of people compare these two tracks. I feel like Mataz Form 8 like comes right at the middle, because it almost is like the midpoint sort of closer, you know, the like little mini climax before the full climax of R-Cast. So in that respect, I don't love Mataz Form 8 as much as R-Cast, but I think, you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't flip them. You need like less of a climax before the true climax at the end.
Yeah.
It's like a gorgeous, gorgeous track. And again, like the sound of it is so integral to the thing, but it's almost like the most composed track here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I agree with you. It's a perfect middle track, you know, yeah. Like it's sort of the place we need to get to be able to get to R-Cast. You know, I mean, we've talked about it. Ottecker's just like so great at album sequencing. You know, that's got to be one of their strengths. And I, you know, I think Mataz is another, you know, shining example of it. I like that song a lot. It does sound, you know, very like Tim Hecker-ish, but in you know, in the best way possible.
Yeah, you know, beyond that, I swear we had listeners single out every single track as a highlight, with some others calling those same tracks low points. But I was sort of surprised to see so many, like listeners Joe and Colin, for example, highlight GR4 and call it one of AE's prettiest tracks ever. Pitchfork also called it the best on the album, weirdly. So what do you think of this one?
You know, that does surprise me a little bit too. I like it. It's the shortest here. Yeah, it is, definitely. Yeah. It's the shortest track, and it sort of like feels a little like maybe less substantial because of that. I mean, it definitely is pretty and stuff, but it's the least substantial song on this record for me, I think.
Yeah, it feels like the most formless track here, and I feel like you got a lot of this stuff on kind of Oversteps. I mean, I think the sound design is much more interesting than on Oversteps, but it's kind of like, for me, if we got too much more of this, it would be like kind of lazy and like generative sounding.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like this has like a particularly tangled web of melodic voices that feel like sort of more generative than a lot of the other things here.
It's kind of the most like Max MSP feeling.
Yeah. But as this kind of like 3-minute thing, it almost like works to sort of highlight the, let's say, humanity of some of the other tracks in a way. And it just kind of like breezes by in this like generative prettiness that I feel like kind of lifts up the tracks that surround it. So I don't know if I would call it a highlight, but I just have no problem with it again.
Yeah, I basically agree. I think it serves a decent purpose, but yeah, I wouldn't call it a highlight, but I wouldn't kick it off the record either.
Well, are there any tracks you really don't like here? And I guess I should quiz you. I feel like you might be a bit surprised, but there's one track that is considerably lower than the rest of them. What do you think it is?
I don't know. Again, I just want to go with mine and say GR4, but if you said it surprises me, I don't know. Escape Desky or whatever, track 4?
Nope, it is your beloved The Red A.
Oh, really?
At a 3.3, which is, you know, substantially lower than I think any of the other ones. But what are your least favorite? It sounds like GR4.
Yeah, and again, I think it's just like, it's not that I dislike it. It's just the, you know, lack of it, of it being substantial. But really, there's nothing I hate here. I mean, there's honestly like nothing I would take off the record. I think it's like a perfect length and everything. You know, it's long enough where you can get into it, you know, you can experience this world and everything, but it never starts dragging or anything like that. I think it's like a perfectly trimmed, edited record.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like every track has like this really clear identity. I mean, I mentioned how like GR4, it would really like start to like blend into its surroundings if too much of the record sounded just like that. But I feel like, again, because it sort of like stands out, it's just one of every track here, which like totally stands out. And to me, just sounds like totally, I don't know, completely conceived in itself. But, you know, in contrast to the highlights, there did seem to be some consensus among our listeners on the two low points here, The Red A and Sin AM. For instance, listener Colin calls Sin AM a nice but ultimately boring Boards of Canada impression. Listener Pogiebox calls it a really generic ambient techno track that any IDM artist could have made ages ago. And listener Joe says, this is the one song on the album that goes on way too long. It sticks out like a sore thumb. Listener Darren says that The Red A is the only one that doesn't work so well for me. The repetitions don't evoke enough of a zoned out headspace, and I found them to overstay their welcome pretty quickly. Listener Jordan called it 6.5 minutes of nothing. And listener Pokebox wrote, The Red A is a track that had me genuinely wondering, what are they even doing? And not because I was intrigued or fascinated by any means. The combination of the stuttered melodic synth on top of the heavy bass in this track barely works at all, sounding more like two components of two different tracks aimlessly slapped together. So what do you think of these takes?
Yeah, I don't agree with either of them really at all. I like Sin AM. I don't really hear too much of a Boards of Canada feeling in it. I think it's
a little bit like a Gas-ish.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I think it's sort of like the one kind of menacing sounding track, you know, here. It's got like a, it kind of does have that like dark through the woods thing that, you know, Gas always does. You know, so I guess I understand that, but I mean, I like it. I think it's a good you know, take on that. And then, I mean, I already said it. I like The Red A. I think those like synth sounds are so interesting. You know, how they're, you know, falling up, you know, threatening to fall apart, and almost like it's gonna get too loud. You know, it's like is it gonna, you know, clip and ruin the recording, you know, kind of thing. Like, just always feels like they're struggling to like contain some sort of wild animal or something.
Yeah, I mean, and I like those like big bursts of low end that sort of join in The Red A. You know, it's interesting because it kind of like flickers into, you know, something I would call like loop debris, you know, like the kind of like, if you're like messing with a loop, you know, like messing with the time stretching of it, and it's sort of like flickering out. There's like little touches of that sort of join the track that I think like sort of push it to the 6 minute territory that it is. You know, a lot of people describe it as just like a sort of damaged chord pattern that repeats for 6 minutes, but it's, I feel like actually like new things keep like joining. There's also some of that sort of loop debris on Sin AM, and it just sort of like raises an interesting aspect of this album where it's like, if we were in earlier Autechre territory, like if these tracks were on LSEC or something, all that kind of like weird, like sort of loop noises and stuff would be like front and center on the track, the way they are at the beginning of M4 Lima. Whereas here they're like sort of light touches that just sort of, I don't know, contrast with like just like the beaming beauty of the rest of it. You know, Sin AM, I agree. It sounds like the least I don't know. Sounds the most like it could, like another artist could have made it. But again, I just feel like it's this great pause. And I feel like both of these tracks, these two kind of longer, like 6.5 minute tracks right before Arkaz, just kind of like cool things down and get things like a lot darker and, you know, sort of still for Arkaz, which I'm not one to like usually come up with imagery to describe tracks, but I just feel like Arkaz just sounds so much like storm clouds sort of rolling in. And I mentioned it sounds sort of like thunder, you know, crackling with that those sort of like shrill sounds. I don't know. I just feel like it's almost, it sets up the ending of the album perfectly.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Well, we didn't talk about this as early as we usually do, although I just sort of started to, but how do you feel about the overall flow and sequencing of Sign?
Yeah. I mean, Ottekker does it again. They're masters of sequencing and flow. You know, I appreciate, you know, I've talked about it. I'm 100% an album kind of guy. You know, I exclusively listen to albums. And so somebody who, especially, you know, nowadays where that's becoming less and less important, like someone who still like appreciates the, you know, art of the album and the, you know, importance of like a piece, you know, like one solid, you know, piece of music, you know, together and stuff. They've done it again here. You know, I think it flows perfectly. I don't think there's a single track on here that, you know, is out of place or isn't necessary. It all is in such a, you know, like Mataz 8, you know, form 8 is like a perfect track for the middle of the record. I think Arkaz is, you know, a perfect ending. You know, M4 Lima is a perfect opener. It's just perfect sequencing, really. It's maybe my favorite part about this album, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like it just sort of perfectly. And what's like surprising to me is that like when the beats do come in, they don't like sort of shake your senses too much. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause mm-hmm. it's kind of moving like back and forth between more like beat oriented tracks and more like sort of lush, sort of verging on ambience type tracks. And I don't know, it just somehow stays very consistent. I also really appreciate like the consistency of, they're like kind of these bright beaming synths that appear in so many tracks, you know, like F7 or GR4, you know, countless others. And yet they sound like the same, but different every time. And I mentioned how like the drums, they have like that, they always have that kind of like just arresting crispness to them, but they're always used a little differently. So there's like sort of a consistency of sounds here. It just ties the whole thing together. I mean, I was going to ask you how you would sum up your feelings on Sign. We've already started doing it, but I don't know. I'm just like totally impressed with this album. I think it's like such a striking, I don't know, like exercise in sound design. And again, I can't get over how it's like I could listen to these sounds for eternity, and then just as a little treat, they also made them like gorgeous compositions. They didn't even need to do that. It would have been like such a great album without it, but they did that too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely enjoy this record. You know, it's not one of my favorite Ottekker albums, but it is. It's a very like enjoyable album to listen to. You know, it's perfect for the nighttime and everything, where, you know, a lot of other Ottekkers, you know, a bit too busy and stuff. So it's not one of my favorites, but I definitely enjoy it. You know, it's because of this like discography being so great, you know, it I may be trying to soften the blow of where it is on my list, just because, like, you know, the top is so great that like I just don't want people to think I dislike it, you know, when we get there.
Yeah, well, as a means of transitioning now into Plus, and this might end up being a pretty long episode because of how long we just gushed about Sign, I want to read this comment from listener Joe, who writes, "Another thing I remember most about the album's release is how immediately people started coming up with crackpot theories, most specifically that there was some mysterious second album coming. I wrote this off at the time as people being disappointed by it. This is always a sign that people are let down by an album, as this kind of shit doesn't happen when modern classics are released. I was surprised as everyone when the Plus rumors ended up being true, and I remember how hilarious it was to listen to your episode dismissing the theory the day after the album had come out. I was with you. I thought there was no way Plus was going to happen." I mean, to be fair, you know, Sean said that there were two albums ready, but I think we both thought they were going to, like, you know, give us a long gap so that we wouldn't, you know, listeners wouldn't like always compare and contrast the two, you know, but we were totally wrong about that. So Do you think that this, like, the second album rumors were detrimental to the way that Sign was received? You know what I mean? Like, people were like, this feels a little empty. It feels a little sparse. It's somehow going to make sense with the second album. And, like, they didn't really, you know, approach Sign on its own terms.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's exactly like what the listener said. You know, that's such, like, a common trope, you know, when someone releases an album that's not that great, everyone's like, oh, there's a second, like, what was the Damn, you know, oh, Damnation, you know, with Kendrick Lamar. King of Limbs, Tool, like 10,000 Days, you know, it's been going, I mean, that record's from 2006, you know, it's been going on for that long. And so it does always just seem like, oh, you know, you just wait, you know, it'll get better, you know, kind of thing. And so it does sort of seem like diminutive. I was shit talking it in our episode that, like, day or two before Plus ends up coming out, but I do just want to bring up again that in that episode I correctly predicted the name of the record. So
I was just about to mention that, because listener, you know, we talked about it before, and I feel like I've let you gloat enough, but listener Tyler wrote in this week to compliment you for predicting the title of Plus. I guess he's revisiting our first reaction episode, so
yeah, you know, I did it one more time
I'll give you credit. On that note, let's move on to Plus. What background info do we need to know?
Yeah, everyone knew that Odd had a second album ready, but it was still a surprise when Plus dropped out of nowhere on October 28th, 2020, just 2 weeks after Sign. Though Plus was announced as Odd 15th studio LP, there's been some debate about whether it's a companion piece to Sign or its own thing, and the guys haven't done much to clear up the confusion. In a 2020 interview, Sean explains that Sign came about from us finding a common thread in what we were doing, but after compiling it, we had a group of tracks left over. They were different from what went on Sign, but I don't want to say that Plus consists of leftovers. You could say it's tracks that leaked out from Sign, but that's not really right, you know. At that point, Rob sort of disagrees with him, and Sean attempts to clarify by saying it's a different thing. Tracks that didn't fit in Sign. Sign has a clear aesthetic, and the tracks that didn't fit with it were missing. So they're different in various ways.
Yeah, that totally clears it up, Sean. Thank you. Thank you for that. Anyway, in regard to reception, Plus was more or less ignored by a lot of publications, and those who did review it were a little mixed. The Wire praised it, but concluded, it's reassuring that Odd can do exactly what's expected of them and still be good at it. And All Music called it a bit meandering, but added, its greater focus on rhythm helps it hold together more strongly than Sign. As for fans, I already mentioned this, but on Rate Your Music, Plus is currently tied with Choristus for the lowest rated of Odd main albums. So now that the dust has settled a little bit, what is your sense, Dan, of Plus's reputation among fans?
You know, Plus has kind of gotten to feel like what it would have been pretty much any other time, but an EP, you know, like there's been so many times like through Odd career that they release that companion EP that's as long or longer than an LP. But for some reason, this time they decided to call it an LP. And I don't know if it's just because, you know, your average Joe doesn't need two Odd albums in a year, or if it does sort of have a leftover feel to it. But it just sort of feels like it's gotten that, you know, the EPs don't get as much press coverage or, you know, that as many ratings on Rate Your Music and all that. It just sort of feels like it's kind of gotten in that same little territory. I mean, even in, like, I have the Rate Your Music things open right now. Sign has 3,018 ratings. Plus has 1,728. You know, so almost you know, a little more than half of Sign's.
Yeah, it does seem that way, that it was just sort of ignored. And maybe if you're the kind of person that just, like, you know, checks Pitchfork to know what to listen to, you would have missed it because they didn't, like, bother to review it. And it's probably true for a lot of people. So it has kind of that, you know, going against it. But you're right. At the same time, it's like it was given album status. And I feel like that makes people judge it a bit more harshly, right? Like if it was an EP, it would be like, oh, great, cool, this is fun, you know. But it somehow has to like live up to album standards. And I feel like that's kind of hurt it in the long run. You know, again, we'll be repeating ourselves a little bit here. But what were your first impressions of Plus? And have you spent much time with it since it first came out?
I mean, basically the same exact thing as with Sign. You know, I purposely like haven't spent as much time because of this podcast. You know, I don't remember what I said on that show. You know, our first reaction. I think I liked plus, you know, right away. I think even I was sort of debating if which one was kind of better to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got a clear answer on that now. You know, I'll save it. But I think I was like more unsure at the time.
Yeah, I feel like I was a little bit, I was just a little bit like mixed on Sign when it first came out, and was sort of pleased by Plus. It never made sense to me, you know, when I first heard it, and as I listened to it over the next couple of weeks after that, it was like, I didn't understand how it was supposed to fit together as an album at all. It didn't sound like an album, didn't flow like an album to me, but just as somebody who just like loved, you know, kind of the NTS era most out of all of Autechre's, you know, discography, there was stuff on here that was like, oh, hell yeah. You know, this is, this is what I was, you know, kind of, I liked Sign, but what I was kind of missing from it. And I was kind of feeling like I prefer this to Sign, even though I think Sign is like the technically better album. You know, so we'll see if things sort of change from there. Before we get to that leftovers question, let's pretend just for a second the Sign doesn't exist. In that case, how would you describe the sound, structure, etc. of Plus on its own terms?
You know, Plus, sort of like what you just said, you know, is a little closer to that previous era. You know, it's much more, you know, beat driven. I guess I'm supposed to pretend Sign doesn't exist. I'm already not doing it, but you know, it's a much more like beat driven record.
Yeah, it's definitely more beat driven. Again, I gotta stop using more because it's like Sign doesn't exist. So more.
Yeah,
more,
I know it's really hard to separate.
It is quite beat driven.
There you go.
Quite noisy and dirty, and yet that isn't always the case. In fact, it's not even the case for like half of the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like sort of the short answer is like it doesn't totally make sense, but I just feel like. Oh, okay. I just have to break the rule here, but it's like that sort of empty space that was on Sign is just like gone. It's filled with stuff now.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Every square inch seems to be filled. There's just lots of beats. There's like lots of noisiness. There's lots of abrasiveness. Again, not true for everything here, but when I think of Plus, I think of kind of this like wonky, like madhouse of beats and noise, sort of.
Yeah. It's fairly different from Sign. You're right. Like that emptiness, which I think is like such a, you know, I mean, one of the best things about Sign and one of the like most prominent, you know, descriptors of it, is gone. It's filled, you know, like I don't get that like outer space feeling from Plus at all. I don't really get like any sort of, I can't think of what I'm trying to say, but I you know, I don't get like that sort of, your feeling of like a place or a thing, you know?
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. I get more of like, you know, less like outer space and more of like a, you know, something like a dark basement or a laboratory or something. There's just like a noisiness to it instead of like an emptiness, you know, obviously I think we're demonstrating it's sort of hard to describe Plus on its own terms, but we got a couple overall descriptions from listeners, like this one from listener Marco, who writes, Plus is a weird beast to me. Call me mad, but it reminds me of Ween's The Pod in that a lot of the tracks sound like they have the flu. There's a focus on beats that sound wonky. And this one from listener Joe, who does bring Sign back into it, but says, Sign could soundtrack a documentary about space that showcases the order and elegance of galaxies, stars, planets, and moons moving in beautiful but predictable orbits, whereas Plus could soundtrack a documentary about the chaos and messy unpredictability of electrons, quarks, and strings. Both albums use the same basic ingredients and sound palette, but do so with very different approaches and results. Listener Dan also called Plus a bit more playful and, quite frankly, more fun. So, first off, do you agree that Autechre are using the same sound palette as Sign on here? But do you think it results in an album with its own identity and character?
Yeah, sort of in the same way, like most of the album EP things, you know, like I just said a little bit ago, like they usually sound completely different, but it's always like, you know, the same, you know, sample banks or you know, sound palette kind of thing that they're working with, and I think that is here. You know, I mean, even from Sean and Rob's comments, you know, it seems these were made, you know, contemporaneously and whatnot, so it does sort of seem like they're using those same sounds, you know, maybe patches or whatnot, but definitely in a like different way, a completely different way.
Yeah, I think it's like it's so completely different that I have a hard time even agreeing. I mean, there's stuff like on 7FM IC, which seems to sort of reference F7 from Sign. I feel like I can hear those same sort of beaming synth chords or synth tones, but they've been like totally destroyed to the point where they resemble like vacuum cleaner sounds or like fax machines gone mad kind of sounds. And it's like, there's lots of stuff here where I can like sort of hear like the remnants of maybe not always a specific sound, but like the sound palette of Sign. And yet it just sounds like totally scuzzed up and like destroyed and messed with, you know what I mean? Like there's no, you know, like this listener called it like playful and fun. And the beats do have that kind of like wonky, like playfulness to them. And yet like there's no hint of melody on most of this, or a lot of this anyway. It just sounds like kind of sheer sound design with no composition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it shows that like it's not only, you know, the sounds, but it's the way they use them, because you know, it does have a lot of this like similar, you know, like you said, like almost references or whatever to things on Sign, but I mean, it's just used in such a different way. You know, Sign focused so much on like melody and you know, what was, you know, such like a pretty sounding record at time, whereas this is, you know, noisy and you know, unmelodic, and you know, almost like I think if Plus came out first, people wouldn't have looked at this as like, and maybe even if Sign didn't exist at all, you know, like this wouldn't be such a clear cut like new era, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, kind of on that topic, the topic of leftovers. Listeners Joe and Jordan both wrote in to say emphatically that Plus is a proper album, not just a companion piece, and definitely not just leftovers. And they both make the point that AE have had no problem releasing longer releases as EPs when they saw it necessary. But listener Marco says that a lot of the shorter tracks keep the same sound as Sign, which makes me think they couldn't fill an album worth of new material and mixed in some Sign B-sides. Meanwhile, listener Colin says that Plus makes him think they were initially going in an NTS direction and had to pull themselves away from that. Of course, Sean and Rob basically admit that Plus formed from the material left over after Sign. So what do you think about this big question?
You know, I wonder if the reason this is called an LP is like solely just because of the times we live in now, meaning, you know, streaming and everything. Because we've talked about it. I can't remember exactly which episode, but there was some EP that they basically say is an album, but you know, contractually, you know, they could only release, you know, one LP a year or whatever, and owed an EP, you know, whatever. I think maybe that kind of stuff is at the wayside now. Maybe either just because of Autechre's stature within Warp, or maybe just because it doesn't matter so much anymore with streaming.
But like EPs, you know, get buried on like the Spotify. You know, you go to the artist page, like you see the new album like right there.
Yes.
EPs are a little lower. So I know a lot of artists like Kanye and, you know, Earl Sweatshirt and stuff, they're releasing like very short, basically EPs as albums, I think because they want them to appear right up there.
That's a good point. But also, I think like just, I know just like as a, you know, sometimes it just solely has to do with like how many tracks are on it. And sometimes it gets sort of buried in the bottom.
Yeah.
But I think you can also choose. But yeah, that's a good point. You know, I could see even Warp just wanting to say it's an LP, you know, just so it doesn't get buried down in that mire of the, you know, singles, EPs. That's one, an aside, I hate how they mix it with singles. The EPs and the singles are together. That always annoys the shit out of me.
I don't think Tidal does that, but I'm going to be leaving Tidal because you seem like now there's like an arms race. Everybody is releasing hi-fi versions, like Spotify is going to, Apple is going to, for like the same price as the normal.
Another
piece Tidal.
Yeah, another aside, though, is everybody uses, you know, Bluetooth headphones, and Bluetooth cannot support the bit rate of lossless, so it does not even matter.
Well, I do not, and I will appreciate it. But, you know, on the topic of leftovers, I mean, I know it's like, maybe there's practical considerations, like you were just saying, about like why it's sort of categorized as an album. And it's not like I've ever heard, you know, like Autechre didn't do really any interviews associated with Plus, because I think they did their like, you know, press tour for Sign, and then they're not the kind that are going to be too bothered.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just kind of came out, and I've never heard them say emphatically like, no, this is an album and we wanted it to be an album. So it's like, I have no idea, and they don't seem to think it's necessary to like clarify that point, as we noted in that like very confusing quote. But it sort of sounds like Leftovers. I mean, I agree with, I think it was listener Colin, you know, I think that's a very intriguing suggestion that like they might have been more in an NTS headspace and then kind of like ended up, you know, scrapping that for Sign. You know, I know that these were kind of like all sort of developed at the same time, but it's like, there's stuff here, like I think listener Colin even notes specifically like E-Cole 4 that, you know, really kind of fits more in with like some of that stuff that they were doing on NTS, you know, because it is sort of beat heavy. There's a lot of like the sort of clanging metal that you hear on like the first AE Live and on the LSEC and even the NTS a little bit still. But there's like a lot of that going on tracks here, like E-Cole 4 and X4. So a lot of stuff that just sounds like, I don't, you know, like it comes from an earlier era or something. I just find their quote so weird that they're basically like admitting, yes, it was Leftovers, you know, but then I think about stuff like the tracks that do sound a lot like Sign, you know, like Lux 106 Mod, you know, and I Press Escape or whatever. Those didn't fit, you know, when you were like sort of figuring out like, oh, what's on the same wavelength and what is it, you know, like I just do not know what to make of this.
Well, I could see it not fitting in like a physically not fitting, you know, because if you added those songs, like then it would be more difficult to like press on a record.
That's true.
You know, so maybe like the, you know, or maybe even they had a goal in mind and said, you know, this is going to be a hour long record or something, and then, you know, in that editing process, you know, those ones were didn't fit, you know, physically didn't fit. I sort of read it that way.
Yeah, that's also like maybe some of them didn't fit because of the style, but others didn't fit because of like the literal space that they wanted this to fit on a vinyl record. You know, it just sort of does feel like this weird hodgepodge. And, you know, on that note, I wanted to read this from listener Joe, who writes, whereas Sign seems designed to be a smooth, casual listening experience, Plus seems sequenced to keep you on your toes, feeling uncomfortable and questioning your place in the universe or whether you even exist at all. Autechre are so notoriously obsessive about sequencing that I reject the idea that this is a tossed-off compilation, and I think that they had a specific intent in sequencing the tracks in the way they did. Plus is the yang to Sign's ying. They don't need to be played in a row, but they do complete each other in a way that I think both albums are a bit stronger because of the presence of the other and the contrast that they provide one another. You know, this raises a couple questions. Does Plus have a discernible flow, or is the lack of flow kind of the point? And in that case, does it need Sign to make any sense at all? I just, listening these past 2 weeks, I like couldn't help but think like this feels like sort of a tossed off, you know, compilation of outtakes. And there's so much stuff here that makes me think like they want it to feel that way. You know, there's like sort of awkwardly long pauses like between like I Press Escape and SL Zero, you know, and like there's like weird, you know, another like weird pause and just like totally hard like stop between like the first track Dectre Scat B and 7FM Ick, you know, like wild shift in direction between Marhide and E-Call 4. Really strange decisions to like put all of the noisiest, like most hiss filled tracks 1, 2, and 3, and then like two of the prettiest tracks, like tracks 7 and 8. You know what I mean? Like I almost started to feel like they want this to feel like a hodgepodge.
Yeah, it's so strange because, you know, like this is the most EP feeling, you know, thing, but they're not calling this one an EP. I mean, there's so many of these other EPs that like work just as well as records, you know, and don't feel like Leftovers or, you know, hodgepodge. And then this one that they're calling an LP does, and not only that, but like also the artwork, like, you know, references the other album, you know, so strongly. Whereas like, I mean like Sickly Sweet sort of like, you know, looks a little bit like Chiastic Slide and stuff, but like you know, pretty much most of the EPs, you know, kind of have their own style of art. You know, nothing is like such, I mean, it's literally the same cover, just different colors, you know,
right. Like that. And that's, like the fact that it's called Plus is like,
yeah, you know, no, exactly.
There's like plus sign and all that stuff, but it's like
also plus, like bonus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So there's that, you know. I should also mention the rumor that they named it as a wink and a nod to the meme of like Sean, please sign Plus. But, you know, it just has this kind of like almost self-conscious like prank vibe where it's like called Plus because, and it's made to feel like leftovers, like they're just baiting us into being like, what the fuck is this? And like, I honestly have this experience, like to listener Joe's point, where every song I'm like, what the fuck, you know, like, and it's almost impressive how they accomplish that. Like literally each track I'm like, that's weird. That's a weird choice to go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I know. I mean, I just spent so long, you know, fawning over their sequencing choices on Sign, and then here it's kind of just. I mean, it's not like Shuffle because you're right. You know, it's like the noisy songs, and then the ones that sounded like they were on, could have been on Sign. You know, it's just like they never do like such a. You know, that's almost like just putting it in alphabetical order or something. You know, it's like, it's just, it's using like just some weird categorization rather than like the actual flow.
I know. Yeah, it does feel like that. It feels like, yeah, some sort of like file, you know, sort of.
Yeah,
folder,
no, exactly.
Kind of,
yeah, filing.
And it's like, I don't know. It's almost like they couldn't have made a worse flow if they tried. I feel like it just feels like they deliberately set out, like the masters of sequencing they are. They were like, what would be the worst way we could sequence this record? I mean, maybe that's not entirely true and we'll talk more about it, but it's like, there's just something so baffling about it that it seems to like call attention to itself as leftovers. On that note, one quick question. Would you ever listen to Plus on its own? Like just be in the mood for Plus?
You know, it's a little hard to answer that completely yet because obviously, you know, this 2 weeks I had to listen to them together, you know, for the podcast. And, you know, when they first came out and I was listening to them, you know, they both had just come out. But, you know, I will say just over these 2 weeks, I was always like more into listening to Sign and stuff. So, again, yeah, I mean, like I said, this is sort of the most EP feeling one, whereas like, you know, a lot of those EPs are cool, you know, whatever, but they're not like the things I frequently come back to and all, and Plus like has that feeling for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much listen to like both records like in the same sitting every day, sometimes multiple times. But there were days where I started with Plus, like just to
oh yeah, yeah. I did that, you know, the whole Plus sign Plus thing. You know, I tried that, yeah.
But it's hard to imagine. And on the topic of like Plus sign Plus and listener Joe's comment about them kind of needing each other, I mean, I think he's got a point where it's like this album feels even more chaotic coming after the like perfectly sequenced and polished Sign. And it almost just feels like, again, everything about it is like calling attention to the chaos that it is. And it does seem intentional. Now, we talked earlier about Autechre's continued love for early electronic music on Sign, and listener Tron shared this related take on Plus. He writes, 7FM ick is apparently an exercise in FM synthesis smeared out and scattered around over a steady but stuttering beat. Marhide, then, makes me think that this record is about the gear. It's impossible not to think of the TR-808 when you hear Marhide, and I love every second of it, but I do get a sneaky feeling that I'm being pranked. Is this extremely simple little track just a way of making fun of our tendency to romanticize old crappy gear? To point out how ridiculously nostalgic we are by triggering our pleasure center with a simple loop of sampled old gear served on a bed of static noise. He then adds, Lux 106 mod must be a reference to the Roland Juno 106, and it sounds like a classic Eno-esque piece of ambient music. It's a stunningly beautiful track, and if Autechre did mean to pull a nostalgia prank on us on Marhide, they sort of try to be nice and make up for it here. There are a bunch of references to specific gear here, like TM1 Open, which is named after a Roland trigger module, and I'm sure I'm missing others. But to Tron's earlier point, it's worth noting that in a recent interview, Sean says, what the hell do you want a 606 cloned at that? Are you going to get it so you can pretend you're a penniless artist from 30 years ago? Isn't it weird how, like, we were just talking about how Sign makes me think of, like, how beautiful and amazing some of this old gear is. And then on Plus, there are a bunch of tracks like literally named after old gear. We talked, I think, on our first reactions episode about like the Deckard's Dream reference on the first track, which is, you know, classic synth. But they almost seem to be making fun of how shitty this gear is.
Yeah, I mean, is this, you know, in our pretend journey through, you know, Autechre takes us through the world of electronic music, you know, is this the 80s, you know, when yeah. when every, you know, rap song had the same 808, you know, sounds in it, and all, which, you know, again, at the time was kind of cool because it was new, but then when you look back, it's I think holds up the you know, less well than the whole, you know, Moog thing and all, like we talked about, because it is like, you know, I mean, the 808 just has like, was it 6 or 10 sounds and you know, that's it, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. It is like sort of, maybe it, like, you know, if Sign is a way of like looking at it in like a nice way, like Plus is maybe, you know, poking fun at it a little bit.
Yeah, I started to like kind of feel that way, and I feel like listener Tron's, you know, notes here are like actually really revealing in a weird, like really tempting to believe in, I think, where it's like, if the first record, it's almost like they're of two minds about old gear, like they love it and they worship it, but they also think it's like kind of silly and doesn't need to exist anymore, you know, now that they're like MSP masters and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's almost like they made two albums where they're like, well, one is like the genuine love of this old gear, and the other one is like the making fun of the old gear. But then it's like, did they make like a sort of shitty, messy, chaotic album on purpose then? Because they're like, is Marhyde meant to suck? You know, it's like kind of just like this weird, clunky beat with like this really obvious like 808 cowbell, which is like just preposterous coming from Autechre. And then the lead instrument on the track is Hiss, you know, that just mm-hmm. builds and builds mm-hmm. and builds and like overwhelms the whole track. It almost sounds like there are points on this record like Dec Dre Scat B. There's so much Hiss on that. It sounds like they don't know how to record, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I mean, especially like where Sign is like such a good headphone record. I think Plus is a better, you know, like speaker, or especially yeah. like a maybe not great speaker kind of thing. Like I was listening to it on my like little Bluetooth speaker at work and stuff, and you know, some of that Hiss, you know, gets lost a little bit, and it almost sounds a little better. But yeah, I mean, it does, like Dec Dre kind of sounds like it is, you know, it's like recorded like how I would record something, you know, like in my bedroom kind of thing, you know, like not a pro at it.
Yeah, because I was listening to, like, just coincidentally, I was like listening to a lot of Todd Rundgren recently, and there's like a track on, what's that album, Something Anything, where it's like he just sort of says, like, he basically like does a bunch of examples of shitty recording, and he's like, this is when, you know, your levels are too high, and this is, and like stuff like that. And I was like listening to that and then jumping right to this, I was like, this album sounds like Todd Rundgren's example of how not to record things. So I don't know. I find that like very compelling, this theory of Tron's. And yet, I mean, I think there are twists, because it's like, when you get to E-Cole 4, that Hiss is still there, but it's like woven into the beat. Like they're total masters of sound mm-hmm. design, you know, like they took Hiss and made something out of it. Whereas the track before at Marhyde, it sounds like the Hiss is like wildly out of control and they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And so, I mean, you know, obviously that was intentional, but it's just like, and again, the previous album seems to have such like genuine love for this kind of stuff. And, you know, so it just seems like they're being playful or silly or like pranksters or something. I just totally get that vibe. But let's get into the tracks a little bit more. What are your favorites and why? And maybe I should quiz you real quick. There is only one bolded track on Plus. What do you think it is?
Oh, man. It's hard to even guess. I'll go with X4.
You are right. It is.
Oh, really?
The only bolded one, it is like substantially higher than anything else here, which is like totally weird to me. But what are your favorite tracks on Plus?
I do like Dec Dre Scat B. I think it's kind of a cool beat. I love how it starts with that like boom 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 boom, you know, like sort of echoey, like weird bass note.
Yeah.
I like X4 a lot. You know, I think that track, it's sort of one that stretches its legs. You know, here on this, a lot of the songs are shorter, you know, with the exception of three of them, basically. And X4, you know, I think really like stretches its legs and gets going and has like interesting experimental like aspects to it and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, there are tracks on, I didn't mention this, but on Sign, where it's like, as it's kind of fading out, you can hear it sort of like almost falling apart or something. And you kind of feel like, oh, that was where it was going to enter 1/6 territory, you know, and like sort of meander into the next fully formed thing. But they kind of like cut it like real tight, you know? Yeah, there are some tracks here, obviously, that I feel like seem to stretch out. And there are other tracks that seem to be like little segments of those weirder parts of their experimentations. That hiss and stuff does have sometimes like kind of a live quality to it. You know, there's even like weird, like, I don't know, Deck Dre Scat B sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like musicians like sort of tuning and like sound checking, you know, like when people are setting up and they're all just like making their own noises and stuff. And then it even has like weird kind of like sounds at the end that almost sound like studio noise of like people like plugging things in and unplugging things and stuff like that. Don't know if I'm just hearing that or what, but yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, there's nothing I particularly dislike, but TM1 Open for me is like the obvious highlight. It's like one of my favorite Autechre songs ever. To me, it like, it sort of like, eclipses everything else here, but weirdly, because it's the last track, it makes me sort of think like, was the rest of the album awesome? Because that was so awesome. You know, like I just have like this weird feeling when TM1 Open ends where I'm just like so impressed that it like made it the whole album worth it. All the like weird twists and turns of it. But it's just like, I wanted to mention this earlier as well, but there's something about the sound palette of both Sign and Plus that is very techno-y to me. Like it's never used in a techno-y way, but there's like lots of like blipping and blooping and stuff.
Yeah, I could see that.
Comes from the techno world. And TM1 Open is where they like kind of fully lean into that, except for it's like this totally lopsided, like I don't know, bloopy wonky thing. It sounds like there's a 4 on the floor beat, but it's like keeps pausing and like adding too many beats to the measure and stuff and like kind of messing up. It like never quite gels. And then it's sort of like, I don't know, it gets into even like silly laser sound. I started to think like, keeping with my theory, like is this Autechre like trying to make bad techno on purpose, you know? But then it's sort of like, it's sort of like elegantly like leads into this kind of like metallic kind of clanky piano, like this weird detuned piano thing, and sort of like opens up all this empty space and just becomes like this absolutely stunning thing for like the last half of it. And it, you know, and it makes like the whole beginning of the track, I think, is like totally worth it to get there and like to arrive at that like great surprise. But to me, it's just far and away the best track here. Now, we had a lot of praise for the 3 long tracks here. Equal 4, which listener Colin calls his favorite track here and maybe my favorite of this entire era. X4, listener Pokepox says it's easy to see this track for the instant classic that it set itself up to be. And TM1 Open, which listener Jordan calls hands down criminally underrated and one of their best closers in their discography. So we already started touching on it, but you know, with these big tracks, they feel like big statements. How do you think they hold up?
You know, I like all 3 of these tracks. They're probably some of the best ones on here. The thing is, you know, as tracks, they are like some of the, you know, like some of the best things. I think TM1 Open is like such a great, you know, closing track on this record and stuff. But it's just like the record as a whole like doesn't gel as a record, and so these sort of get like a little lost like in that you know, mire of again it being sort of like that EP thing. Like there's plenty of songs that are on EPs of Autechre's that like kind of get lost a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, they stand out because they're so long, but it's like, it's just weird because it just feels like Equal 4 comes completely out of nowhere. It doesn't make any sense coming after the 3 tracks that it comes after. And yet it's like such an obvious, like incredible piece. Like it's just like the weirdest sort of like heavy metallic clanking beat, like so much like metal on this track. And it sort of like peters out in this weird way. And then the beat returns like in this, if this is not a recorded ride bell, I don't know what to say. Like, I am shocked because it sounds so freaking real. Like as the beat sort of returns in this kind of like clunky, like just, I don't know, it just sounds so real, like a real kit or something. And it's just like this incredible kind of junkyard groove for 15 straight minutes. I mean, I'm in love with it. X4, I feel like I don't like it as much as a lot of people do, but it's like really striking, that kind of bouncy like hiccup of a drum pattern kind of thing, and the way it like just keeps picking up steam and like solidifies, you know, when the snare joins, it like all kind of makes sense and is not like this really propulsive like rocket taking off, even though it then kind of like peters out and then weirdly ends on like some of the prettiest chords between both of these albums, like very briefly. But I mean, it's almost like when I listen to this record, I feel like totally confused all the way through. And then I just like look back at it and I'm like, it's worth the price of admission for those three tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You know, it's definitely a record worth listening to because there is like so much individual gold here. You know, it's just, it just doesn't like gel as a record. I mean, it feels like leftover compilation, you know, hodgepodge kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, we got a surprising amount of love for the opener, Deck Dre, Scat B. Listener Joe writes, plus is easily the weirdest album in Autechre's discography. In this regard, Deck Dre is the perfect opener, but in every other regard, it's the most baffling opening track they've ever done. Feels like it's going to develop into something more orderly like M4 Lima did, but instead it just continues sputtering around with string and synth stabbing left and right. It's probably the biggest statement they've ever made with an opener. And listener Tron writes, the opener works like a little fanfare, pulling us back into the AE universe 10 seconds in, and I'm pranked to check what I believe is my phone buzzing from a call, but it turns out just to be this batch of records' carefully distributed dose of Autechre humor. On that note, listener Pokepox wrote in to say, 7FM Ick is a pretty big highlight to me. It's such an uncompromisingly ridiculous track, and I kind of love that. At its best, this track can leave me nearly laughing out loud over just how absurd it sounds, while also offering a pretty fun beat on top of the bizarre screeches and wails that make up a good chunk of the track. I really wish we got more of this goofy, chaotic side of Autechre, as I feel it's something they haven't really explored in a long time. So, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but what do you think about this sort of bizarre string of tracks at the start of this album, and maybe just like the goofiness in general here?
Yeah, I think for the goofiness first, I agree with the listener. You know, 7FM Ick is, you know, a little silly, a little goofy. I like it, but that does, you know, synth noises are kind of strange. I like the opener. I mean, I said, you know, Deck Dre is one of my favorites here. I really just love like that opening note. It's such like a good opener for a record.
And it's a cool mess. And I mean, do you agree? Like, I think I totally do that. It's like meant to recall M4 Lee.
Yeah, no,
like, it's meant to feel like it's gonna form and it doesn't.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. It sort of feels like a different, you know, version of like the experiment of M4 Lima or something. Yeah. You know, like it's one that like it didn't coalesce, or something. But I think it's like definitely a direct reference to it.
Yeah, I feel like it's sort of like a troll, and I feel like a lot of this record is. I mean, to the point of the humor, it's like I feel like there is like a weird, silly wonkiness to so much of this, and it's like, I don't know, kind of genuinely funny to me. There are times where I feel like, I don't know, like on 7FM, it's like less funny than kind of frightening. It's kind of like a frightening track to me. I think I feel kind of the same about Deck Dre. And yet just like conceptually, the idea that like 7FM is almost composed of like vacuums run amok is funny. And there's so much shit here where I'm just like, I feel like they're really in like a trolly, pranky mood. It's almost like, what album was it that we talked about? No, I can't remember now, but it was like, there's been times before where it was like, Autechre seemed to kind of like lean in one direction and be like a little unsure about it. So like, just so you don't forget, like we can still fuck shit up. Like here's some abrasive noise that's going to rip your head off. You know what I mean? And they seem to have done that a couple times in their career. And this almost feels like maybe they were a little like, not sure about Sign, like how people are going to take that. People are going to think they got soft, like they lost their edge, and they were like, just so you know, we're still nuts.
Yeah, I wonder if it's that, or if it's just like, you know, they were making these tracks at the same time or whatever, and they're like, you know, these are good songs, you know, why waste them, you know, kind of thing. Which, yeah, you know, I can agree with it. I mean, I'm glad.
But isn't it? It's so weird, though, because like when I hear something like Deck Dre, I'm like, what about this made them feel like, no, we can't just scrap this. We got to put it
out. That's true. Yeah, yeah. I think as a reference to like M4 Lima, you know, it's short and it kind of like, you know, provides a context, you know, with the other album, you know, its companion, yeah, you know, sort of album. You know, it might be that more than, you know, the fans got to hear it, you know, sort of thing.
Well, is there anything you really don't like here?
Well, do you want me to pick what the lowest rate your music one is?
I was gonna quiz you, but they're kind of like all tied. They're like all.
Oh,
like
really?
For some reason, X4 is like the highest by far, and the rest are like at about a 3.5, 3.6, like literally all of them.
That surprises me because I thought Marhide would be, you know, the clear low one.
No.
Huh. Well, Marhide's the one I don't really like. I mean, it's just I don't understand it. Is it a joke? You know, to just use the 808 cowbell. It's the one time that the Autechre seems a little lazy. You know, it's just
I know. I feel like it's meant to suck on purpose because like
the
hissing is like, I mean, it's kind of like insane. Like, and I'm kind of impressed by just the balls to like make a buildup of hiss, the lead instrument on your track, but it still just sounds so trolly. Like I'm just getting fucked with.
Yeah. I mean, like I don't on its own, I don't hate it. Like it's not like an awful piece of music. It just sort of seems for a group like Autechre that's like such, you know, masters of electronic music. It kind of sounds like something like, yeah, I would just make it my bedroom or something, you know.
Right,
I literally like have the equipment to do that and the know-how, whereas like, you know, so much other Autechre leaves me in this state of like I couldn't begin to make that sound sort of thing. And Marhide is just the like complete antithesis of that.
Yeah I mean, for me it's like I want to say that stuff, you know, I don't really care for Marhide. I don't really care for Dectre, but it's like, as we've been discussing, it's like conceptually, I kind of dig it. Like, I kind of like how crazy Dectre is and how hard it throws you off after you've been listening to Sign. I kind of like how ridiculous Marhide is. It seems to be intentionally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, my biggest problem is with like the kind of Sign-esque tracks, but we'll talk about them in just a second. First, I want to note that for the record, listener Colin wrote, I hate 7FM. It's probably the worst thing Autechre have ever released, maybe ever. And on the topic of other low points, Colin also noted that he doesn't care for the more Sign-esque tracks here, adding the ambient moments on Sign are way stronger, and there is just too much of this dumped onto Plus to make the album feel cohesive in any way. On the other hand, listener Joe wrote in to defend these tracks, saying they serve as necessary breathers, but are also lovely in their own right. And listener Pokepox, who seemed to like Plus a lot more than Sign, says that anything he doesn't like here is ultimately too short to feel unwelcome. So what do you think? I feel like this is like kind of the elephant in the room about these like kind of interlude-y like Sign-esque tracks. Are they so similar to Sign that it just kind of like completely disrupts any attempt at like clear identity or flow for Plus? Or are they like kind of breezy enough to just enjoy, maybe even essential to the flow as breathers, like listener Joe said?
No, I think that they rob Plus of any identity. You know, those tracks are the ones that feel like, you know, leftovers from Sign, and it's like what completely ties this to Sign and makes it feel like an EP to me. You know, it doesn't get its own identity. You know, if you got rid of those and you just had more, you know, if they were replaced with like other things, you know, like Marhide or Dectre, you know, like things that are like different, you know, from Sign, I think you could, it would be easier to accept this as an LP, I think, because yeah, all those, you know, ambient-y, you know, sort of tracks here, you know, Sign-esque ones, they just feel like, yeah, those are the ones that got cut from Sign.
Yeah, it feels like that, and honestly, they kind of remind me of, we were talking about GR4 on Sign, how it like feels a little bit more generative and like less human,
yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
It kind of works. It's the only like moment of that, and you know, whereas a lot of the other tracks have like a incredible balance between the generative and like the human touch, as we were discussing. For some reason, I can't tell if I'm just sort of tricking myself, but like these three tracks feel particularly like generative in an almost lazy way. Maybe they would like shine more in a different context. But that's the other important thing here is like, because they serve kind of as interludes here, you know, like on Sign, how do I put this? You really want to commit to that kind of sound. If Sign had like a banger, like Ecole 4 in the middle of it, you would, you know what I mean? It would kind of cheapen and lessen the rest of it. Like if Lamont Young's Well-Tuned Piano had like a rock track at some point in the middle of it.
Yeah.
The rest of it would sound like boring, like flittering nonsense, but you'd really got to commit to that. And Sign totally does. Here, it's like, because it's not totally committed to that kind of sound, these feel like interludes. They feel like kind of lazy. It makes it very weird where there's two interludes back to back, two quote unquote interludes. it just like cheapens them. And then I started to think, like, is the beat heavy nature of Plus for some listeners kind of cheapening the entire Sign experience? Like, if you're only ever listening to these two records together, it makes Sign feel a little bit more slight in comparison.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I honestly like sort of wish they didn't release these 2 weeks apart. Yeah. I mean, I said it in our first, you know, listen sort of thing, you know, before Plus had gotten announced, that I thought that they would give Sign some room to breathe and everything. And then again, with the artwork being so similar, it's like they want them to be related.
Right,
you know, like I sort of already said it, but that just like really the artwork thing is so strange to me. You know, it hasn't really happened before. I mean, like Oversteps and Move of 10 are both like circles, but I think they're still like but different looking, you know, kind of things. It's almost, you know, like I think we even talked about it in our first listen thing with Plus, like, you know, we were trying to figure out, you know, is it supposed to be one thing? You know, is it
Sign,
you know, Sign Plus? Like, should it be like kind of listened to together, just released separately kind of thing? And, you know, I sort of felt like that, I think, at first. But now it's, I don't know, it's so strange. You know, if this had come out 6 months later, I could very easily just say, yeah, it's the Leftovers, it's the EP, you know, whatever. Kind of thing, but it just seems like they're supposed to be connected in some sense.
Yeah. I feel like they wanted them to feel like the yin to the other one's yang, and it's meant to be kind of like tranquility and chaos, or like perfect form and like, you know, just utter mess. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was kind of detrimental to both albums in a weird way. Like, I do wish there was a little more space, and they could have even kept the same cover art and the same like relationship. But if we all would have like digested Sign for a little longer before Plus was introduced into our lives, we might even like both of them more.
Yeah.
And it might even just be more like, it would be fun how crazy and chaotic Plus is, instead of like baffling in a lot of cases. So, you know, we're already starting to sort of sum up our thoughts here, but I did want to ask you as we kind of wrap up here, how you would sum up your thoughts on Plus. Kind of sounds like you're similar to me, in that I would have said that I liked it a lot more than I think I actually do.
Yeah. I mean, I think even during our first listen, you know, episode, I think I said I liked Plus more. And I think I did sort of like going into these 2 weeks, I think I was sort of thinking that I felt that way in spending the 2 weeks with it and stuff. Like, Plus is much more of a mess, and I don't enjoy it as much as Sign.
Yeah, I mean, I think I also at one point was flirting with the idea that I liked it more than Sign, and the reason is that there are some like really high highs here, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. A couple, you know, particularly the big tracks here are like, I think, stunners, like just absolutely phenomenal, and really worth the price of admission. And there's just so much weirdness here that it's like, I guess when I was originally listening to this back when it came out, I was thinking like, you know what? There's stuff here that I completely am in love with, and I know it's going to click any day now.
Yeah, exactly.
And now I've realized it's never going to click. It's not a clickable album, and I think that's by design. It's like not meant to be clickable. It's meant to feel like a bit of a chaotic mess, more than a bit of a chaotic mess. And it, in that respect, it works. But I mean, it's still a mess. So, you know, how do you think Plus compares to Sign? Sounds like you obviously like Sign more, but for better or for worse, are they so connected at this point that they kind of need each other?
Yeah, I think definitely for better than worse, or for better or worse, you know, they are connected. And I definitely like Sign more after this. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier how like Plus seems to like kind of actually hurt Sign a little bit. And I also had this weird experience kind of revisiting after some time passed, where it was like, I didn't feel the need to like compare and contrast them as much, you know, like it wasn't like a constant, like, how do they fit together, or like, which is better, you know, like because mm-hmm. that pressure was off a little bit, and I just sort of accepted that Plus is like kind of crazy. I was able to get over it. And I was like, you know what? I realized Sign is actually like, is perfectly contained. I don't need a second album, you know, to like make this make sense. It is what it is, and it totally works. And Plus, similar, like, just am at peace now with the fact that it's kind of a chaotic mess with some like enormous highs. And, you know, so in that respect, like the experience these past 2 weeks kind of lifted both of these for me, even if I sort of realized I think that Sign is a lot better. Do you think it was the right choice to do them on the same episode, by the way, or should we have done separate episodes?
You know, I think like you got to do them together because they're you know, linked. But I do sort of wish that we had done them different just to like listen to them in kind of isolation from each other to see if, you know, if you separate them, it does that make Plus better? Does it make Sign better? But I think you just, yeah. you can't. I mean, them, Autechre themselves are the ones I think that, you know, put these ones so linked with the artwork, with the title, with the release, you know, being so close together. You know, I mean, we've split up some of the EPs, you know, into bonus episodes and stuff, and that felt like much more okay than doing Sign and Plus different. Like I only wish we had, for my own, you know, thoughts, you know, just purely to see what they're like in isolation. But I think it would have been the wrong move.
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like it's just like you said, because Autechre linked these records so close together and you know, really are emphasizing the connection between them. It's like I've never not like sort of listen to them both in the same kind of like time frame, and I feel like forever when I'm in a Sign or Plus mood, I will end up throwing the other one on right after it. They do both have like the same sort of depth and like mastery of sound design, even if like on Plus there are points where it's like almost intentionally bad. There are other tracks, like I mentioned, like those long ones where like the sound design is just stunning, and I honestly feel like they've reached new heights in this era of like what they're capable of. And, you know, we'll see what comes next. But it's like, for now, when I'm in the mood for like that kind of like level, I'm going to reach for both of these albums at the same time, pretty much. And, you know, for better or for worse. So where did Sign and Plus end up on your running list here?
Yeah. So I put Plus the lower of the two. I put it at number 21, just right.
Wow.
Right above Oversteps, right below Untilted. And then Sign is at number 16, right above Sickly Sweet, right below Garbage.
Wow. Well, I'm not super happy with my rankings. And I was actually sort of shifting things around because I was like, I like Sign more than this one, but not this one. And yet that one's higher than this one. And I should note that we are going to be sort of revisiting our list. Yeah. And like probably for the next bonus episode, we'll like maybe try to make some final decision. Like we'll revisit some of the stuff we kind of forgotten and like kind of make a concrete at least top 10. But I ended up putting Sign as high as number 8 because I was so goddamn impressed with it, which is like right below Choristus for me, right above Elsec, actually. I bumped Elsec down a little bit. I really feel like it's an incredible accomplishment. And then Plus, I honestly have a little too high for my liking, but it's like just above the 1-6, you know, sets and just below Sickly Sweet. It's at number 12. And you might think, wow, Gabe talked a lot of shit about that album. And yet he put it all the way at number 12, just outside of his top 10. But I still feel like the sound design is like so masterful. And there are a couple tracks here that are like some of my favorite Autechre tracks ever. So it's like, if I had to reach for an album, I was just thinking like, I would have no problem reaching for Plus. You know what I mean? Like it's going to have some weirdness, but it's going to have some absolute greatness as well. So, all right, a long episode, lots to talk about, lots we didn't get to talk about, but we'll probably circle back to as we do kind of revisit these top tens. But do you have any closing thoughts on this sort of final chapter of the Autechre journey for now?
No, I mean, I hope they release another record before we, you know, get through all the, you know, other junk. But it will be nice to get to that stuff that, you know, has gotten pushed to the side, you know, Guestcom and all that. We do get a lot of emails, you know, asking us to do it. We've just been sort of holding off. So I am looking forward to, you know, exploring a part of Autechre that I'm not as familiar with and stuff, you know, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, we're going to do those Japanese bonus tracks first, but it's like, talk about next level sound design on Sign and Plus. It's going to be crazy to jump back to like the Warp tapes and just see what kind of revelations that causes. But I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Exactly. Well, what do you think about Sign and Plus? We'll get to any leftover comments on an upcoming listener email episode. So send those in, gauntcastpod@gmail.com. First, though, our next proper episode will be on all of the Japanese bonus tracks. We want your opinions, hot takes on those. Again, gauntcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Gonkcast. Look us up YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram, @GonkcastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.